now.
Head On with Bob Kincaid. Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights. They're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it. So call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Hot damn, it's Monday. Yes, 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 indeed it is. It's Monday. Saturday, Sunday, pulled through. Monday, ready to go. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is Head On. It's your nightly confrontation with the facts. And for some reason or another, I'm just fired up tonight. I don't know. Maybe it's... Now, I understand that there are Democrats out there that say, well, what good is censure? I fully understand that, but you know what? I saw Russ Feingold stand up in the Senate today with nothing more than a harmless little censure resolution. Just, you know, a little bit of, I mean, it's, you know, a couple of feathers out of a pillow, just sort of the downy fluff. It ain't nothing. And I watched a gaggle of Republicans run around and scramble as though he came into the Senate with an axe. That tells you how desperate they are, the Republicans. They can't even stand, they can't even tolerate the notion of discussing whether or not George Bush thinks himself above the law. They can't, it's amazing to me. You know, that. You should see these craven cowards of the Republican Party. Well, I'll tell you what, there was a wee bit of a soundbite in the top of the hour news from our good friend and compadre, Bruce Birch. But what I want you to hear, this is a bit of a chunk, okay? But, you know, we don't have a boss here, you and me. We don't have some network suit saying, well, you can't play an actuality that is longer than 20 seconds. We can play any damn thing we want to here. So I've got about a minute and 35 seconds worth of Jeff Sessions, and I want you to hear it. You know, you probably have already heard what Feingold said. It was well-reasoned. It was articulate. It was forceful. It was, you know what it was? It was patriotic. But I want you to hear the response. Now, Arlen Specter got up, and apparently the crux of Arlen Specter's complaint was that Senator Feingold didn't stick around so he could say mean things to him. Trademark Republican Party. So that apparently in Arlen Specter's sad little world, somehow or another, that makes Feingold's argument somehow less persuasive. Not me. But understand procedurally what happened after this was that at one point the proud Alabama Jeff Sessions stood up. And this was after it had been announced that Maggie Inouye, wife of 50 years of Senator Daniel Inouye of Hawaii, had passed away. Senate Minority Leader Harry Reid made that announcement, and Senator Jeff Sessions, the proud of Southern Alabama, stood up, and Republican that he is, preyed upon Senator Inouye's grief. There is nothing lower than a Southern Republican. Listen to this for yourself. It'll just. I'm sorry. I hope I'm not ruining anybody's dinner, but you gotta hear what passes for thought, what passes for intellect inside the Republican Party. Senator Sessions now.
I think back on a young
Senator Inouye serving in our military, putting his life at risk and nearly losing it for our country. One thing he had a right to expect of his Congress was that though as a soldier he would be supported in the conflict. Now, we're here today hearing a resolution presented by Senator Feingold to censure the President of the United States. It is baseless, it's not sound in law, and it's not sound in policy. We, by a nearly three-quarters vote, or over three-quarters vote, voted to send our soldiers in harm's way. This Senate voted too.
Oh, he's
and
mad,
isn't
he?
And authorized the President in a use of force resolution to identify those responsible for attacking us and to attack and destroy them, to use such military force as he deemed appropriate to attack and kill them. And our soldiers have been doing that. And the Supreme Court recently had to deal with the situation in which an American citizen was captured abroad, Hamdi.
Hamdi.
And they caught him, and he went before the Supreme Court of the United States, and the issue was whether or not he was entitled to a trial. And the question was he entitled to a trial? The Supreme Court held otherwise. The Supreme Court said that he was a prisoner of war, and the authorization of military force authorized the military to attack and kill enemies of the United States. It also authorized them to capture them. That was incident to the use of military force. And I would submit, Mr. President, that it's quite plain that our history of military affairs supports the concept that surveilling the enemy in a time of war is an incident to the carrying on war.
Did you get that? What does that have to do with George Bush and whether or not he lied to the American people about his little secret spying program? Nothing. Here's the shocker, though. This is the one that's going to make you go, oh, Bob, you're pulling my leg. Jeff Sessions used to be a federal prosecutor in Mobile, Alabama. Did he get up with that mealy-mouthed BS in front of juries? And yes, he did. This, what, at least the young Senator Inouye had a right to expect us to support him in the Congress and the Senate. What in the hell does that have to do with George Bush's domestic spying program? You did catch that one little line in there, though, didn't you, about how we authorized the President to go out and find the enemies of America. So is he saying thereby that by spying on people like you and me in our everyday phone conversations, that George Bush has determined that the American people are the enemy of America? If so, and I think that's what I heard, then what I'm to understand here is that Jeff Sessions, this mealy-mouthed, dead-from-the-neck-up Republican from South Alabama, has confirmed what I have said all along. The Bush administration and the Republican Party fear you and me, the American people, more than they fear any terrorist in any cave, anywhere on the sweet face of planet Earth. We are the people who, by remembering the Constitution, present a threat. By our devotion to the Constitution, present a threat, create fear in the dark and ill-beating hearts of George Bush and Dick Cheney and Condi Rice and all their little generals. The defenders of freedom are the ones that the Bushevics hate and fear the most. Jeff Sessions is afraid of freedom. Jeff Sessions is afraid of the people who not only stand and pledge allegiance to the flag, but pledge their lives, their fortunes, and their sacred honor to the Constitution of the United States of America. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
With Bob Kincaid.
On the last Fourth Estate, we heard from Robert Fisk.
What has now become a habit of compromising on the semantics of reporting in order to avoid criticism. You know, if you call a Jewish settlement or neighborhood a colony, you'll be criticized and called potentially anti-Semitic.
And a little bit of activist history and the Red Scare.
On the line with us right now, we have Kate Fossil, biographer of Ann Braden.
You know, I got interested in Ann's life because of her being a white Southern voice against racism. And
leave it to our listeners to ring up and keep it light.
I don't either. And, you know, Bruce is concerned about the remote control for his DVD player. I mean, I'm thinking about getting rid of the remote control on my blow-up doll. I mean, you know.
What's his name?
I never kiss a tell.
FourthEstateRadio.com.
Okay, listen up. If you're sick of hearing lies by right-wing corporate pukes who like to pretend they stand up for the working guy, then head over to the Cup of Joe radio show where the truth will hit you so hard you'll have to wear your hard hat. You can listen to the screaming audio at cupojoe.blogspot.com. That's cupojoe.blogspot.com. Now get back to work.
Conservatives? We don't need no stinking conservatives. Here's Bob Kincaid.
Chewing on a piece of grass, walking down the road. Tell me how long you gonna...
Indeed. 18 minutes past the hour. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid. There was some talk about the framers of the Constitution by Arlen Specter when he was trying to rebut Russ Feingold this afternoon on the floor of the Senate, and what they did and they didn't anticipate, and what they expected and what they didn't expect. And Russ Feingold himself had said that the framers of the Constitution anticipated that sometimes the chief executive would get power-crazed or run mad. And that the power to check him was placed in the Congress of the United States. And he's right, they did anticipate that. But what the framers of the Constitution did not anticipate were Republicans. They did not anticipate that because of blind party loyalty, Republicans like Jeff Sessions and Arlen Specter would stand up and mistake the oath that they swore to the Constitution for an oath they never swore to George Bush. They love and they defend their politics more than they love or defend their country. It's that simple. Because the analysis of George Bush's evil, George Bush's wrongdoing, George Bush's absolute disdain for the laws of the United States of America makes it clear. Censure? Hell, he should be impeached. Impeached? He should be in a dock at The Hague. I hear there's a new cell open where Slobodan Milosevic used to live. That's where George Bush should be. Okay, and let's make no mistake, the man is a war criminal. Not because I say so. Not because Michael Moore says so, not because you say so, but because the laws that we put down at the end of the Second World War, the laws that we demanded be enacted, prove him to be a war criminal. It's that simple. He started an offensive war. What did Robert Jackson say? We've talked about it before. We are punished. With regard to the Germans, he said, we need the German people to understand we are not punishing their leaders because they fought this war. We are punishing their leaders because they started this war. Censure? I admire Feingold for having the nerve to stand up and mention it. But censure is only a starting place. Let's go to the phones. Rick is with us from Panama City, Florida. Hey, Rick, you're head on. How you doing? How's your weekend?
Hey, Bob, I'm so glad to get in early because I am just riled. I was watching the same thing you were watching. I was telling Agnes about it. And, boy, wasn't that something. And it's unfortunate Anaway's wife died when she did because they had a congruence of things that they wanted to get done, these crazy Democrats, that I thought would have been perfect, and they still managed to pull it out in language that occurred well after the Pennsylvania vampire got done talking was just worth watching it all day long. So I was glad that I did. Did you watch it all day?
Yeah, for the most part.
Well, first off, let's take a couple of things, okay? This guy... names are bad with me. I remember numbers, but that fool from Pennsylvania,
Arlen Specter.
Yeah, he's making a Specter bowl of himself.
Yeah,
that guy. He turns around and kept using language so lawyered up that I couldn't believe it. Did you notice?
Oh yeah.
And if it's true, and if this is the case, but yet he kept stating everything that he was quoting from the witnesses and these committees and hearings as fact. And then he qualify with those qualifiers of lawyers speak, if that's the case, and all that. But yet he makes it sound like it is the case. That guy's a slime. I mean, he comes all the way back from cancer to further destroy America. I mean, what could they possibly have on this guy?
You know, you would think that, yeah, you're absolutely right in that, Rick. You would think that something like a possibly terminal case of cancer would change your perspective on
at
the world a little bit.
At least giving epiphany.
Yeah, sorry, no epiphanies.
You know, you should at least be able to say to yourself, my God, I have been spared, therefore I will try something new.
I will be decent to my fellow men. Nah, it ain't going to happen, Rick.
And yet he wrapped him around, he wrapped himself around the bar and used lawyers speak as his get-out-of-jail-free card. And it was,
well, but the weenie business of... Well, can't Senator Feingold stay? I listen to him. He can and listen to me. No, maybe Senator Feingold's got a committee hearing to go to.
Maybe Senator Feingold didn't want to hear it.
Well, maybe Senator, but maybe, no, honest to God, Rick, you know, they tried to make something out of this. Senator Feingold was supposed to be speaking an hour and 15 minutes before he spoke. But Bill, the cat killer Frist, whose family's made millions on abortions.
Yes.
Frist has to stand up and try to keep Feingold from speaking.
Yeah, and I was lucky. I had forgotten about it. And then Randy said it, and then bam, I went right over there, and there it was. It was happening. But it had slipped my mind. But that was just a perfect example. Another perfect example. This little cretin, this little bouncing on his toes, little man from Alabama, the one I'm talking about.
Jeff Sessions, yeah.
Yeah, that guy. You wouldn't let him around your little league team for fear that they might come out wrong. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, that's a gooey, creepy. I can't even stand to watch him.
I'm an Alabama boy, and he makes me sick, okay?
I mean, when he starts getting up on his toes and doing all that, I mean, there's something about him that's creepy as hell. And this guy starts, he starts using almost street language. I was waiting for him to start, you know, rapping. To be honest with you, this is a thug thing. Duh, duh, duh. You don't talk about the man while you're in a war and all this kind of stuff. We're going to throw down in battle. Either you're my brother or you're my enemy. I was waiting to hear all that kind of stuff, and he said it in so many words.
Well, he started off by feasting on the dead body of Mrs. Inouye.
I know. It was so terrible.
I mean, these people are. I mean, they're not people. They're undead. They're bloodsuckers. They're vampires. Sure.
What was that? What was that word? Macumba, Macumbagumba, or whatever it was. It was that stuff that goes down there in Haiti. There, that voodoo.
Yeah.
When the dead walk the earth, there's no more room in hell.
Right.
Macumba, I think that's what it's called. I mean, that's the way these guys are like. They're just so pathetic. They're evil beyond belief. And now they're fraying at every end, and they're just finally showing themselves for what they are. There is not any fetus that they won't just break in half and suck the mallow out of the bones to survive. They are so ugly
and
inhuman.
That's exactly what I said, Rick. It strikes me that these guys think that they swore an oath to defend George Bush.
Yeah, really?
They have no love for the Constitution. They have no love for the Republic. You know, Arlen Specter, well, moderate Republican Arlen Specter, my rear end.
And they're aligned with the most powerful man in the Dominionist movement in this country and around the world, Dobson. I mean, they're all in on this thing together, just warping all these people's minds to vote their jobs away, to turn around and say, losing my job is a good thing, losing Ford, losing GM, throwing away pensions, devaluing the currency. But, you know, being a slave to all the fuel in the world, our own fuel.
Right. I got something for you here, Rick. You mentioned Ford. Guess what?
What?
Now, we understand that American manufacturing is under fire, right?
Right.
Well, the religion industry that so loves America, right? The American Family Association just announced today a boycott of Ford Motor Company.
Oh, I'm sure.
Because
I'm sure.
Ford Motor Company actually tries to sell automobiles to Homer sectionals.
I mean, and they were supposed to, they already tried that and then they gave it up. I guess they went back again?
Yeah, they've come back because Ford Motor Company lied to us. They said they wouldn't try. They said they wouldn't try to sell cars to Homer sectionals, and now they're doing it.
I mean, you know how many white, older gentlemen, I mean, older than me, in their 60s, I see driving Toyota Tacoma trucks, those Toyota, what are they, Tundras?
Yeah.
They're really nice-looking trucks. But here, I know for a fact that they get in their Baptist churches down here, one on every corner, actually four or five, they're all crowded together. But the point is they all get in there and talk about American patriotism, but they won't even buy American. Even with their biggest purchases, they won't even try to buy American. I mean, you can't tell me you can't point at a car and buy American. You may not be able to do it with your freezer or your refrigerator or your dishwasher, but you can buy a Ford or a Chevy or a Plymouth or,
no more Plymouth.
No more Plymouth. But a Ford or Chevy.
Yeah.
But they don't. They don't, and yet they're
And Rick, that's not to say that the American auto manufacturer doesn't have problems of his own.
I'm not going to say that the Ford is a good car.
No, it's one or the other.
I'm just going to say, if you're going to say you're a patriot and it's a time of war, aren't you supposed to be spending your money at home so you can spend it again?
Got me a big old Dodge truck that I can't afford to put gas in sitting out here in the driveway.
Yeah, exactly. We got Ford.
We got American automobiles sitting in our driveway.
Well, very good. So do we. Except for one Jap Mazda that was built in '89, and that's our yard car.
But exactly, and you live down south. You got to have a yard car. Is it up on?
Yeah.
Is it up on blocks?
No, I drive it every day.
Oh, okay. Just checking.
On it.
Yeah. What I'm trying to get at here, Rick, is these people, they don't love America.
No, they don't. It's all being played. Everybody's being played, but everybody got into this rapture weirdo culture of fake religion and fake Christianity and fake everything. That because they all got this little hang up about one thing or another, and they don't want to come to the table and solve it. They don't want to come to the table and sit down and find a way to make abortion as limited as possible. They don't want to come to the table and sit down and create a situation where there can be equal protection under the law for homosexuals and some kind of civil union. Nobody wants to come to the table and just address those two things. Instead, they want to turn around and create a situation where I know a man in this town who worked for a certain municipal center for years, and they abolished his job to put on prison slave labor trustees. And then after a month or two, this guy and his wife got in a fight. He got drunk. He got in trouble. And he got his job back for nothing at that municipality. And he actually is supervising the rest of the convicts almost. I mean, there's a gun pointed at him. But he knows his way around. He knows how to weed eat and lawn mow, and he knows where everything's stored. That guy's where he's a slave.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's what these people are for. They don't kid me. They're Dixiecrats. They want their...
Well, it shames me. It shames me to see somebody like Sessions stand up. Truly, Rick, he makes me feel ashamed for my brothers and sisters in Alabama, because I know very, very well that there are Alabamians that are as horrified by him opening his mouth as I am.
Well, I believe you, and because you've taught me that. I mean, it's you. You spared me. You saved me. You and Agnes saved me. And some of your callers, excuse me. I mean, because I was at the point where I couldn't listen to you folks talk. I couldn't even, the minute I heard a twang or a drawl, I was like, shut it off. You know, but you saved me because I found that there are good people that are nestled in these enclaves of filth. And believe me, don't get me wrong, I have just as much bad to say about the Democratic Party and those Volvo-driving coffee-clatch freaks that have destroyed my party, enough to drive me out of it. But, and I mean, and they're all up north in New York where I'm from.
Well, and it remains to be seen how many Democrats will get behind Russ Feingold. I mean, this had better, by God, be a party-line vote.
Don't expect it, because you're not going to get nothing. Well, you know you won't get nothing out of Lieberman, but you're not.
You know, I better see a yes vote on this censure from Bob Byrd. I better see one from John Rockefeller.
You ain't going to see that.
Hillary better get behind it.
You're not going to see it from Kerry, and you will never see it from Hillary. For Pete's sakes, there's a love fest going on between the Bush families and the Clinton families. I mean, he's the other son. You know, how far does the apple fall from the tree?
Don't start me out this way tonight,
yeah?
Rick. Don't, no.
Oh, come on, man. Come on. Let's tell it the way it is. Hillary Clinton is the enemy. She's not your friend. She's not my friend. She's not America's friend. The Clintons destroyed America. They worked for the Republicans undercover.
Well, I tell you what. I think we need... some of that's true. I mean, I still hold a grudge about NAFTA and this whole...
NAFTA, that's just the start.
Oh, I know that was the start, but I know when it got started, you see. But the thing is that we have to deal with right now is, you know, there were so many things operating this afternoon, Rick, in this whole Feingold. All he wanted to do was stand up, give a little speech, and turn his little bit of resolution in, walk away. That's all he wanted to do.
All
now,
right, well,
but wait, what happens? That was scheduled to happen at time X, okay? And if that had happened at time X, if that had happened at 4 o'clock when it was supposed to happen, all right, it would have been lead material on the evening news.
That's right, but the lady died.
Well, no, it ain't about the lady dying. She didn't lead the news.
Well,
no, what happened, Rick, is...
She pushed all them backwards.
No, that's you're still missing it just a little bit, brother.
Tell me what it is.
Okay. At 4 o'clock, it can lead the news, because his speech would have been over by 4:30, and it could have been the front end of the evening news with lots of in-depth coverage. By delaying it to 5:15, you make it that much harder for it to become a real lead feature for an evening newscast. Now, I don't know. I haven't seen it yet. They may have tried. But by pushing it further back into the news cycle, by pushing it into, Kelly Wallace at CNN, by pushing it into her first fuzzy navel or whatever.
Well, yeah, I'm on Central Time, so I wasn't making a connection.
Yeah, well, this is Eastern Time stuff.
Yeah.
You know, because, you know, Feingold not getting to give his speech until later, that means that the Washington press corps is half in the tank by the time he's done.
Yeah, that's true. That's absolutely true.
You know, they're already on their third martini and their second heroin.
Well, me too. One last thing. When we're talking about the Clintons, Mr. Clinton, when he was leaving office, had a chance to pardon people. One of the people he could have pardoned was this fellow named Pelletier. I think I'm saying that right. He's an Indian. He's an Indian activist. He's been in prison 24 years now.
Leonard Pelletier.
Yeah. And he was totally framed by the American government, the FBI. Framed for murders he did not even commit. And if you got people Google him, listeners, and yourself, Bob, you will come to websites where there's people supporting him to this very day. He's been denied parole here.
Oh, I'm very good friends with an individual who busts his butt on Leonard's behalf almost every day.
Well, then you know what I'm talking about. And Bill Clinton had a chance to pardon him, but he chose to pardon the runaway billionaire Rich instead.
No, I remember.
He could have done them both, but he decided to do this runaway billionaire, you know, that which ended up buying him his house in New York or just or New Jersey, wherever the hell he is.
Yeah.
You know? But that's, you want to talk about the kind of creeps the Clintons are?
No, I really don't. I mean, that's the thing. We've got bigger creeps to deal with in the present, Rick. We've got Jeff Sessions. We've got Arlen Specter. They're in the present. You know,
they're in the present, but so is people trying to run Hillary Clinton as our mascot, as our number one designated leader, and they've already got a program designed to kill that. And, I mean, the Republicans are trying desperately to get that to happen.
The Republicans want Hillary more than anybody else in America.
That's right, and that's why I bring up Pelletier, so that everybody listening to this show will remember not to trust these people and not to nominate them. You can't do it, because it's like some weird, I don't know, I wish I could think of a word of what this is, like a dog or a snake swallowing its tail. Yeah, sooner or later you're gone or you choke.
Yep. Yeah, I agree. Hey, Rick, we got to hit another phone call. We got them
fantastic.
Lining up here. All right,
thanks,
you take
a lot,
care, brother.
Bob, I appreciate it.
No trouble. Bye now.
Bye now.
Let's see. Let's go to David in Nashville. Hey, David, you're head on.
Oh my gracious, it's a break free zone on the Bob Kincaid show.
Yeah, we're just kind of sliding through tonight. There's a lot of stuff to get out there.
Okay, I won't tell if you don't tell.
Okay.
I've got some really bad news for my dear brother in Florida.
Okay.
All the bad people get away with this because America has such an incredibly bad collective memory. We're not able to hold on to topics. There are those in Croatia that understand what a pope did in 1200 as relates to their current circumstance this minute. There are those of the Muslim faith that understand what happened in the year 1400 when guys with Norman crosses on their shields went through their part of the country. They carry those things through, and I throw this out as proof. When was the last time you had a caller? When was the last time even you, as the most well-spoken talk show host on the planet, when was the last time you talked about gas prices, Bob?
Let's see. Okay.
Sounds like wobbita wobbita to me.
No. I had it in my newscast for Saturday night's Fourth Estate Radio. But that's about it.
Drat fudge, Pichot, I wasn't listening. Gas prices right now are higher than they were 6 or 8 months ago, when some callers were threatening to take to the street, convert 78 Dodge pickup truck to biodiesel.
Mm-hmm.
And lo and behold, the price per barrel has dropped.
Yeah, that's the fun part. That's the booby prize. The price of oil on the world futures market is going down.
Hello, America. Use for $2.40 gas in Nashville, Tennessee was $61 a barrel crude. It's less than that. We're paying $2.50 a gallon downtown Nashville this afternoon. Gee whiz, do you suppose maybe Exxon Mobil would rather have $15 billion a quarter rather than $10 or $12 billion a quarter? And we're not talking about it. We're not reacting to it. Certain parts of our body have been stretched to accept this invasion, and now they're going to stretch us and kill us all, or they're going to violate us all over again. When is America going to wake the heck up?
pitchforks and torches. Well, you know the answer to that, David. You know when America wakes up. America wakes up the same way it woke up after 12 years of just greed-infested Republican excess in 1932.
I'm not sure if we don't wake up sooner. We can't use the same timeline we used in late 20s and on into the 30s. We can't use that timeline now because in 1932, Bob, they would still count votes.
Well, there's that. But the thing that's worth remembering, David, is that the American people elected Herbert Hoover in 1928. He took office in January of 1929. All right? By October, the stock market was dead. And the American people had to learn and had to live through the stupidity of their decision in following after a Republican Pied Piper again. We're there now. We, you know, it's August of 1929 right now, David.
I agree completely.
It's August of 1929. It's August of 1939, all rolled into one. And in September, all hell breaks loose. Gasoline prices are going up again. The Iranians are saying, you know, if you screw with our nuclear program, we'll shut down the Persian Gulf, and we can do it. Because, you see, you're map savvy, David. You know what the Straits of Hormuz look like. Iran doesn't have to sit there and fire Exocet missiles at everything coming and going out of there. All they got to do is take a few rusty old hulks out into the middle of it and sink them for reefs.
Precisely.
And nothing comes and nothing goes, and there's not a damn thing George Bush can do about it.
We don't have any military. We don't have any political currency around the world.
And you damn sure can't get an aircraft carrier in over that stuff.
Nope.
Now, I'm not sitting here telling the Iranians anything they don't already know. They got the rusty old hulks ready to go.
And whatever the naval equivalent is to the War College, I'm sure they know it too, because those guys have to just be wearing their shoes out. Can we please get this chimpanzee out of the White House? If he does this to us again,
he's killing us.
He is killing.
Well, there was one story today, David, that I didn't have a chance to read all the details of, but one general, how's this for irony? General William S. Wallace, United States Army, I do believe, in the march to Baghdad. Remember how we had to get to Baghdad lickety-split so we could pull down Saddam's statue? And in the process, we missed a few ammo dumps, and now we're paying the price in improvised explosive devices that are detonated with garage door openers and cell phones? Well, General William S. Wallace said, you know, I'm not in such a hurry to get to Baghdad. I'd like to stop and lick a few of these fedayeen.
Oh, no. No, 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 no. Everybody, the sooner you get to Baghdad, the sooner you bump a rank.
Yeah, because that means we win.
Mission accomplished. Where's that roll of quarters for the flight suit?
Oh, God, I despise him, David. But I mean, that's where we are. It is. It's August 1939. It's August 1929. All rolled up into a happy little ball. The American people almost didn't survive the fall of 1929, and we, you know, the crap really hit the fan in 1939. You roll those two together and tell me what happens. When this all comes together for us now, take both of those things together. You know, we were able to survive the front end of World War II, David, because FDR was beginning slowly to get us out of the Depression. We were able to do it. Now, it's 2006.
Roll that recovery back 6 to 9 months, and I'm not sure we could have done as a nation what we did.
Well, this nation was...
In 1939, 1940, well, especially 40 and 41.
Yeah,
because... We were just beginning to think about it on paper, and we had that phase out of the way when it really hit the fan in 41.
Yeah, and the problem is we had an industrial base. We had iron. We had steel mills. We had shoe factories. We had textile mills to make uniforms. We had a, God knows, a huge manufacturing base in arms and armaments. The Springfield Armory, for God's sakes. The Remington, Winchester, Browning.
Exactly.
It's all gone. It's gone, David.
You know, even if you buy a Ford, and it's a fine and worthy thing to buy a Ford, a Chevy, a Dodge. The percentages for outsourced parts, whether it be Ford or whether it be Chevy, or certainly if it's a Chrysler product, but Ford as example, because as part of an industry that services the auto industry, it's now over 40%, closer to 50% of a Ford Taurus is built outside the United States.
Yeah.
I'm an assembly plant. That's all we do. But if it really became a war that we really need to participate in, we've got to somehow turn Walmart distribution centers into tank factories.
Yeah, then that ain't going to happen. See, that's the thing. The American people were able to scrape and buy. I saw a really bad World War II propaganda Hollywood thing rolling by at the end of it, and at the end of the movie, the little sign down there: "Buy your bonds in this theater." We can buy bonds till hell freezes over. All that's going to do is pay our Chinese debt, David.
One last little financial thing before you hit the three-quarters of an hour break. Late in the news cycle today, Prince, whatever his name is, nudged some minister of something or another in the ribs. Are you aware that to just remind us that the United Arab Emirates aren't so crazy about our little thing? Simple discussion of moving some of their holdings out of U.S. currency into euros, they were floating a figure of 5%, has now become almost a flat statement of they will put 10% of their offshore holdings into euros, which will devalue the dollar, which will make life tougher. So by virtue of them walking that country, that group of city-states, down the primrose path, encouraging them to believe that we would do anything in the world to keep them as our pal money-wise, now they're mad at us. So some of that routine about the Chinese calling in the debt, the Arabs calling in the debt, whoever else is holding our IOUs, that could very easily begin. And if any nation, if any group of nations begins any sort of a movement toward changing in dollars for euros, it won't be one guy. It'll be several guys.
Yeah. Oh, we don't begin to contemplate the trouble that we're in, David. Big trouble, bad trouble.
We sold off our abilities to do things for short-term profit.
Yeah. And if trouble does, and I'm not talking about some pissant little war with Iran, David. That's another one of those wars that George wants to start and can't finish. I'm talking about if real trouble comes. Where people get tired of us trying to throw our weight around, and some little coalition of somebody or another decides they want to come here. We're screwed.
A few changes in Pakistan, possibly. Oh, they happen to have those nuclear things.
Yeah, they're nuclear.
Yeah, they're nuclear. Well, wait a second. He's our buddy. You know, I just told them all they were Arab. Yeah, they're our pals. We know all about them. How about you guys got mangoes?
Jesus.
Oh, Bob, let's make a break.
All right. Take it
Thanks
easy.
Thanks for letting me rant, Bob.
No, thank you. Thank you for giving.
Happy Monday, and I'll bet my bracket turns out better than your bracket.
I got my brackets filled out, brother.
I actually
got your volunteers to the Sweet 16 in my bracket.
Oh, I think you're dreaming. They'll take Winthrop, but Wichita State will win, and that'll be it. Wichita State's a scrappy little club.
Well, I don't know. You know, I cheated. I got two brackets. I got two brackets. I got my wishful thinking bracket.
And you got your bracket calendar.
And I got my put down the crack pipe bracket. But I got Tennessee into the Sweet 16 in both of them.
Oh my goodness! I hope you're right. I have reservations, but just be careful of those Salute cheerleaders.
Yeah, see, my poor little Mountaineers have to. Well, Southern Illinois. Anybody thinks that's a cakewalk, it ain't.
Forget it. Nope.
So they get by Southern Illinois. They get the winner of Iowa Penn State. Now that's probably Iowa.
I think you're right.
Now, assuming they get by Iowa, they get Texas.
See, the road doesn't get any easier, does it?
Then it's Duke. Yeah, thanks for putting us in the Duke region. What happens is if you make a nice showing in your tournament, you can stay out of the Duke region.
Well, there's no way the Volunteers should have been a second seed, but I'm thankful for it. I just, you know. Lord, they could end up facing UConn. Now, wouldn't that be a day at the beach?
Well, that's not going to be pleasant. All right, David, you take it easy. I'll email you. We'll compare brackets.
We'll stay in touch on this one.
All right, see you now.
Have a great night, Bob.
Bye. Yeah, I know we do a lot of politics and we do a lot of serious stuff, but. This is one of those places where I have to participate in the culture at large. I love March Madness, especially when I got a dog in the hunt. And my poor Mountaineers just mailed in the last of the season and mailed it in the Big East tournament. I'm hoping that's because they were saving their energies for the for the big thing. But yeah, that's SIU. Then Iowa? I mean, I guess Penn State could beat Iowa, but I don't see it happening. And that makes, Iowa, well, that makes Clyde over at WD40.com and me hated enemies for at least, one night. He's already sent a Go Hawkeyes along. Ooh. But, if you want to, you're take a moment, take a breath, and if you're into the brackets, let me know what you got picked. Let's go on to the back to the phones. Bob is with us from North Dakota. Hey, Bob, you're head on. Good to hear from you, brother.
You calling?
Yeah, you there?
Yeah, I just wanted to give you a heads up to head on.
All right.
They're choking them back. You know what a choke is?
It depends on your definition. What do you mean by it?
You're not an oil man, are you?
No, not by any stretch of the imagination.
Okay. A choke is what you put down the well to cut the flow, okay?
Okay, well, that makes sense.
Okay.
Like in a shotgun.
A choke, yeah. You cut down the flow, okay?
Sure.
What, dude?
Okay.
Oh, I don't know where it's at. Anyway, today, the chokes went down in North Dakota in the Williston Basin. And I talked to you about the Williston Basin, and
right.
Mike did too, right?
Mm-hmm.
Today, after they cut back the price on oil, the chokes went down. I mean, they went down everywhere. Every well that's producing in North Dakota just got a choke put. Oh, and now we don't have any more oil.
Yeah, because what? Is this a result, Bob, of what was happening in terms of the price per barrel dropping? Are they trying to drive it back up again?
Yep.
You know,
Absolutely.
They're not even fooling with us anymore. They're not maintaining the oil companies. They're not maintaining the fraud that somehow the pricing is related to supply anymore, Bob, because we know
down in the basin. That means they choked off every well. Every well got a choke, okay?
Yeah, and we complain about OPEC.
It isn't anything I was in a patch a while back, and Mike, he's quite aware of it, but hey, today the chokes went down, and hey, people, the chokes are on you, okay? It's like the jokes are on you, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's a fake. It's all fake, the whole thing. The Iraq-Iran war is a fake. okay?
Yeah.
It's phony.
It's a racket.
Huh?
It's a racket. It's Smedley Butler.
Ah, you remember him.
I read it.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for reading it. I was going to send you something here. There are a lot of people that understand what's going on, but there are very few people that actually get the message. And the message is that if you are fooled, if you're fooled, it's your own fault for being fooled, because everything was there in the beginning. It's been there since 1948. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
These people have been plotting and planning and planning and plotting against you since before you were born. Okay?
I don't have any problem with that.
No, they have been plotting and planning, and now they have the reins. They have the control, and they want you to believe. I mean, hey, I never was a door gunner, you know?
Yeah.
And I do have some ideas about survival.
Mm-hmm.
But it has nothing to do with whether I murdered a whole bunch of people way back when, which I probably did. You know, it's got nothing to do with that. It's got everything to do with what they're doing to you. I mean, hey, that was then, this is now. And they're you're living in a world of confusion, and you want to find an answer, and you want hope for your children, you want hope for your grandchildren, you want to have something to grab onto. Well, grab onto this, okay?
Mm-hmm.
We owe everyone an apology, including the whole Muslim world, because they are not a vicious people. They've done nothing to us, but we've done everything to them.
Sure.
For how long? Since 1948.
Well, it actually goes back further than that. It goes back to the end of the First World War.
All right. If you want to go back to when we divided,
Yeah.
Okay. But we have segregated the Muslim world from the Christian world. We have segregated them. We have denigrated them to the point where, yeah, it's coming back. And you have to accept the fact that our fathers. Our fathers and our grandfathers looked upon them as less than human. And unless you can accept them as brothers, sisters, then you're not even there. I mean, it's like...
You're right. You're absolutely right.
If I ever have a chance for any redemption for what I have done, in the name of this country, it is to say this. I am guilty of being a believer. I believed. I held my belief.
But the scales are off your eyes now, Bob, and we've got to leave it at that, because we got this news thing going at the top of the hour, and we have to hit that now. Well, all right, we'll be talking to you later. Good to hear from you.
Sorry that I...
No apologies.
I'm apologizing to you and to Agnes, because I want to drop you guys all together. I really did.
Well, we'd hate for that to happen.
No.
We got to get out of here, though,
all
right, Bob.
All right.
Talk to you soon.
Hey, bye. Agnes, don't hit him with a hand.
She's gonna. Later. Bye now.
Bye.
Sitting in the wreck of Europe with a map of Europe spread out in a hall of a sign. Every single national...
All right, this is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
For a piece of the pie. I'm sitting in the wreck of Europe with a map of Europe and the lines and the borders are gone. Gotta do this jigsaw puzzle, it's an awful muddle, but somehow we gotta go on. Lawrence of Arabia is waiting in the wings. He's got some Arab sheikhs and kings, and we're in debt to them somehow.
Head On Radio Network News, I'm Bruce Birch. Senator Russ Feingold earns new title, Senator No. The senator from Wisconsin, Russ Feingold, today presented a resolution of censure on the U.S. Senate floor. This resolution explicitly condemns the illegal wiretapping of U.S. citizens that the Bush administration has been doing since just after September the 11th, 2001.
That we're going to let the President of the United States break the law of this nation and not do anything about it. Now that's a victory for the terrorists. If we won't even stand up for our system of government, because everybody has to be afraid to mention that this president broke the law.
Feingold's censure resolution was rebuffed by several Republicans, including Jeff Sessions of Alabama, who attempted to play the patriotism card to invalidate the censure argument.
I think back on a young Senator Inouye serving in our military, putting his life at risk and nearly losing it for our country. One thing he had a right to expect of his Congress was that though as a soldier he would be supported in the conflict.
No time has yet been set for a vote on the resolution. Government becomes more secretive. National Security Advisor Stephen Hadley quietly revised the guidelines for determining access to classified government information last year, increasing emphasis on allegiance to the United States and allowing the government broader latitude in rejecting candidates without a clearly articulated cause. In December 2005, revision of the adjudicative guidelines for determining eligibility for access to classified information, Hadley made semantic but substantial changes which seemed to mirror a broader shift in Bush administration policy. The Justice Department pulled the personal financial records of at least 9 members of Congress and at least 7 former staffers last summer and fall, many of whom have been identified publicly as having links to ex-lobbyist Jack Abramoff, Roll Call reported Monday. In a stretch running from June to October, a pair of aides at Justice examined the financial disclosure forms of Senator Conrad Burns, Representatives Tom DeLay, John Doolittle, and Bob Ney, as well as ex-staffers for 3 of those lawmakers, all Republicans, according to House and Senate records. In addition, the agency looked over the financial records of several lawmakers who had no public connection to the investigation. Jim McDermott, Democrat of Washington, Earl Pomeroy, Democrat of North Dakota, Eliana Roslenitin of Florida, Republican, John Sweeney, Republican of New York, as well as Delegate Eni Falinomavega, Democrat from American Samoa. This is news from the Horn, Head On Radio Network News.
Now, Mrs. Johnson, before we close on your mortgage loan, I want to make sure you remember Mike.
Hi. You can trust me. I'm African-American, just like you.
So, here's the low monthly payments and interest rates we promised, and here's where they triple.
The rest of this stuff is just here to make sure that we get your house when you can't pay us back.
What a lovely house.
Predatory lenders are never this easy to spot. Call us at 866-222-FAIR and protect yourself with the facts. A public service announcement brought to you by the National Fair Housing Alliance and the Ad Council.
Maggie Inouye, wife of Senate Commerce Committee Chairman Daniel Inouye, Democrat of Hawaii, died today after a long illness. Minority Leader Harry Reid of Nevada said Inouye would be absent for a while as he accompanies his wife's body back to Hawaii. Reid said the couple had been married for 57 years, with Inouye proposing on the second date. President Bush's approval rating has sunk to a new low, according to a USA Today CNN Gallup poll released today. The latest results show only 36% of those polled say they approve of the way Bush is handling his job. Bush's previous low was 37% set last November. 60% of those polled said they disapprove of Bush's performance. That matches an all-time worst rating hit last November, and again 2 weeks ago. Greenwich, Connecticut businessman Ned Lamont entered Connecticut's U.S. Senate race Monday to challenge U.S. Senator Joseph Lieberman for the Democratic nomination. Lamont's challenge is the first Lieberman has faced from within his party during his 18 years in office. Lamont hopes to garner the support of Connecticut Democrats who have expressed dissatisfaction with Lieberman's pro-war stance in Iraq and his perceived closeness with President Bush's administration. Rumors in Iraq have a weight that government and even newspaper reports don't seem to carry, and the latest rumors suggest Iraqis believe a civil war is imminent and that the United States secretly wants it to happen. That suggestion is contained in the March 10th edition of The Baghdad Mosquito, a daily collection of open-source intelligence culled from Iraqi newspapers as well as rumors from a group of knowledgeable Iraqis. According to the bulletin, one of the rumors making the rounds is that U.S. Central Command Chief General John Abizaid's expectation that more shrines would be attacked before the violence is over prove that these attacks are part of an American plan. For Head On Radio Network News, I'm Bruce Birch.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're Head On with Bob Kincaid.
Alrighty then, let's do another hour of conversation radio right here on the Head On Radio Network. I'm Bob Kincaid. Your part of the conversation is, well, I'm not pushy, I don't want to say mandatory, but it's every bit as important as anything I have to say. 6.5 minutes after the hour. And I guess this is kind of a little programming note. So far, we've been lucky. It has rained here at our secure, undisclosed location in the hills and hollers of wild, wonderful West Virginia. We've even had some thunder. Now, I've told you before that sometimes when it thunders, our high-speed, high-dollar connection runs under the bed like a terrified chihuahua. And so far, it hasn't. But if it does, you'll know that that's what was going down. So, yeah. But you know, we're people of faith. And as such, we're maintaining our faith that after lots and lots of complaints, that maybe our provider has gotten it right. We hope, kind of, a lot. Anyway, the phone number, of course, 877, the number 4, Head On, 877-443-2366. It's very easy. Agnes is sitting here by the phones, and you know, we don't even do pledge drives. So if you want to get involved, feel free to. We had some great conversation in the previous hour. Our buddy David in Tennessee noting that we have this trouble keeping our eye on the ball. Our friend Bob in North Dakota, who sees up close and firsthand the manipulation of the energy industry in this country. Our buddy Rick in Florida, who, like me, sat and watched in stunned amazement as Republicans in the Senate did everything in their power to stop Russ Feingold from saying something bad about Dear Leader. The Republican Senate is just it's sickening. These people have no love for the United States whatsoever. They have a love for their power granted them within the United States, but no love for the United States itself. They wouldn't behave the way they do if they did. Today's debate, long before anything was said by or about Senator Feingold, the debate had to do with raising the debt ceiling. Yeah. The Republicans want to write more hot checks. I mean, that's framing. George Lakoff is right. It's framing. And the biggest part of framing is to learn to be, and I know there's a lot of people that don't like his work. It's not fashionable to like Ernest Hemingway. But a lot of framing is Hemingway-esque. Short subject-verb sentences. Manuel sat against the wall. Manuel drank his brandy. We went fishing. That's framing. You know, so what we're dealing with in the United States Senate are people who have no allegiance to this nation. The Republicans in the United States Senate, and, you know, the Democrats across the way, I almost thought Harry Reid was going to apologize for Senator Feingold wanting to stand up and talk. It was sad.
But he went on and announced the passing of Mrs. Inouye, which was appropriate. And then Jeff Sessions of Alabama stands up and tries to drag Mrs. Inouye's dead body into his hate for anyone who criticizes dear leader. There's a day, you know, this is, you know, again, this ain't Rents, this isn't George Norrie or any of that foolishness. This is reality spoken here. And there's going to come a day when the people of Alabama will ask themselves, what in God's name were we thinking? Just like people in Kansas will ask themselves, what in God's name were we thinking by sending a man like Sam Brownback Mountain to the Senate? And something I mentioned, I want to go into a little further. Something I mentioned in the conversation with Rick. You know, I've told you I get these weirdo press releases from the American Family Association and Donald Wildman. Donald Wildman, who considers himself an America-loving Christian. How many news stories have we had in the last 6 months about the trouble that Ford is in financially? Or GM. And this punk, Donald Wildman, is floating a petition for a boycott of Ford because Ford buys advertisements, because Ford advertises in magazines for gay people. That's right. Ford places advertisements in magazines for people who do something different when the lights go out than what Donald Wildman does, and of which Donald Wildman does not approve. This is the language from his press release. Ford had agreed to stop funding the groups in a meeting with AFA on November 28th. But when confronted by a group of homosexual leaders about the decision, Ford reneged on the agreement with AFA and announced they would continue their funding. I mean, you know how these people are. For the past 3 months, AFA has been trying to get Ford to honor their agreement, but Ford has refused. The homosexual groups are very dedicated to their cause. They are urging their supporters to buy a Ford product to prove to Ford and America that Americans support homosexual marriage.
Can you connect, you know, part A, B? No.
The success of the boycott will depend on whether or not pro-family individuals are as dedicated to their cause as the homosexuals are to theirs. If pro-family individuals fail to respond with the same commitment as the homosexuals, homosexual marriage will be given a huge boost. What? We'll just take a moment now while you sort of digest that. What an un-American bastard. What a genuine sorry son of a syphilitic sea cook Donald Wildman is. Sorry seventh son of a syphilitic sea cook. My bad. Can you imagine attacking one of the last industries that's ostensibly American because of who they sell cars to? Run it back 50 years. Donald Wildman's right there then. Donald Wildman's predecessors. You should not buy a Ford automobile because they are selling automobiles to the Negroes.
It's the same thing.
These people had a little quandary earlier about whether or not we should sell out our national security. to the United Arab Emirates. And now, Lord God, now Donald Wildman wants to hurt Ford for who they sell their cars to. Any doubts left? These are not my fellow countrymen. Are they yours? 877, the number 4, Head On. 877-443-2366. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Chip inside her head gets switched to overload, and nobody's gonna go to school today. She's gonna make them stay at home. Daddy doesn't understand it. He always said she was good as gold, and he can see no reasons, 'cause there are no reasons. What reason do you need to be shown?
Head On with Bob Kincaid.
This is Bruce Birch, and if you missed my show Sunday night, here's what I got up to.
A group of U.S. businessmen in the UAE said they will invite the Oprah Winfrey Show and other talk shows to the Gulf to change American public opinion, which has helped block Dubai's takeover of 6 U.S. ports. He's saying that they want to reach out to the average guy in the United States and explain why the UAE is important. If you want to reach out to the average guy in the United States, they need to send something, not Oprah. I mean, how many average guys do you know watch Oprah? I don't. If they want to reach out to the average guy in the United States, as much as I hate to say it, they need to send Jerry Springer and the Jerry Springer Show over there with the bald guy. You know, maybe they can do a UAE version of My Grandmother Is Also My Lover or something like that. Oh, that's just a...
Join me, Bruce Birch, for All Things Reconsidered every Sunday evening, 7 p.m. Pacific, 10 p.m. Eastern, allthingsreconsidered.org.
It's Grace.
We're actually very boring people, Rama. That's why we call ourselves homebodies.
Well, it's Rama.
Sure. I mean, group sex for us is when we're both involved.
That's a crap.
It's really, really smart.
We're a nice little Petri dish here in Vermont because you can experiment.
Join Grace and Rama, homebodies, every Sunday from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern on the web at homebodies.ramabahama.net.
A liberal life in the conservative darkness. Here's Bob Kincaid.
He's just one man. His enemies say he's on their land. They got him outnumbered, but a million to one. He got no place.
Okay, so Donald Wildman. That's enough of Donald Wildman. I despise Donald Wildman. But you know, you need to know where these religion industry creeps are wanting to take us. Donald Wildman wants to, you know, who's his boycott going to hurt? Is some member of the, no, I'm not done with Donald Wildman, apparently. Dadgummit. See what I do. Understand what hurting Ford means. Share price? Eh. Executive compensation? Eh. Not so much. There's still members of the Ford family. You know, great-grandsons of Henry and stuff. Are they going to be hurt? Nah. They're going to be rich, 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 rich until hell freezes over. Who is it that the religion industry wants to hurt? They're not going to hurt the Homer Sectionals. The Homer Sectionals have more money than Donald Wildman. They can afford a car. They don't have to buy American. No. They can go buy a Volvo or a Mercedes or a Beamer or a Hyundai or a Daihatsu. Do they still make Daihatsus? I don't know. Toyota, whatever. No. There's only one group of people that by doing this, Donald Wildman hopes to hurt. Donald Wildman and his religious fanatics, his Taliban so-called Christians. Donald Wildman wants to hurt working people. Okay? It's that simple. He's not, until he can get the weirdos like the Brownbacks and the John Cornyns and the Rick Santorums to pass a law saying homosexuals can't buy no automobile, until he gets to there, he can't do anything about, you know, those people who do whatever it is they do when the lights go out or with the lights on. Who gives a damn? It's none of my business. Until he can get to that point, he can't affect their car ownership. But what he can do with his ugly little anti-American boycott, what he can do is hurt working people. He can hurt the moms and the dads who spend 8 hours a day in assembly plants. He can hurt the men and women who put the cars together. He can hurt the people who have already given concessions and taken losses and know that they're facing layoffs. He can hurt them. Somebody inside the United Auto Workers needs to let those good union people know what the religion industry wants to do to them. Because, you see, the religion industry, now they want to control the women's insides. They want to say who can and can't buy an automobile, and which kind of automobile they can and can't buy, where they can buy it, and who they can buy it from. They want to make sure that a few more Ford workers lose their damn jobs. But they'll pry for you.
Sounds like a severe control problem.
But when you've lost your job, they've got their Republican legislators in the state houses and in the Congress of the United States and God knows in the White House. And something like unemployment, oh, that's communism. Or health care for people who have lost their jobs. Communism. The real enemy in the United States isn't named Mohammed. The real enemy in the United States isn't called Abdul. The real enemy in the United States has a name like Donald Wildman. And James Dobson. And D. James Kennedy of the Coral Snake Ministries. The real enemy in America is people like Claude Allen. Do you know the Claude Allen story? Oh, well, you know, that one slid by over the weekend. Tried to slip that one past the martini and heroin crowd in the crack Washington White House press corps. Claude Allen, chief domestic policy advisor to George Bush. Claude Allen was George Bush's highest-ranking token African-American in the White House. Claude Allen got dinged over the weekend. You know, a couple of weeks ago, he said, oh, by the way, Mr. Bush, I am submitting my resignation. I need to spend more time with my family. Well, it turns out he needed to spend more time with his defense counsel. Because Claude Allen got caught on videotape. On videotape, no less. You know, and here's frame 762. This is where he puts the Target stuff in the hex bag and walks in. Okay, and so frame 775, and he's walking in the door. And there's frame 796, and that's where he's signing the return slip. Claude Allen, chief domestic policy advisor. What does this tell you about Bush administration domestic policy, for Christ's sakes? The dude is a ripoff artist. He's a con. He's putting the con back in conservative sunshine. Now, I spent most of my time with C-SPAN today. How much coverage of Claude Allen was there on CNN? How much coverage of Claude Allen was there on MSNBC or God knows Fox? Who's Claude Allen? This is the Fox News Network. Who is Claude Allen? We don't know. We take you now to a beach where a white woman may be missing. Greta Van Susteren. How about Claude Allen? Oh, God. No, Claude Allen was running a con to the tune of about $5,000. 25 times he ran his little refund scam between Hex and Target over in Maryland. Hell, the least he could have done was run the con on Walmart. Might have had some. No, I wouldn't have. This is an evil bastard. Another one of them. They're all. I mean, you know, put the neon sign up at the white. Evil bastards are us. Blink, 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 blink. Mad scientist, boo. Mad scientist, boo.
It was a mistake.
Yeah, and the thing is, the fundies out there. His minister has been quoted as saying, "We understand this is all a horrible mistake, and Jesus has already forgiven Claude Allen, and we don't understand why the judge won't forgive him, too, because he is a child of God." No kidding. So, that's where all of this is. They're serial abusers. America is in a domestic violence nightmare. Some of us aren't willing to put up with it anymore. But a lot of us still are. A lot of us are like the woman at the domestic violence shelter, talking to the counselor, pouring her heart out and saying, "But he says he'll change. I miss him so much and I love him. He says he'll change. He won't hurt me no more." Domestic violence counselors hear that every day. No one's hearing that in America right now. But, you know, that's where the American middle class is. They say they're Christians. They want the best for us. They say they'll make America better. I know they will. You know, there was a statistic once upon a time that said a woman in a domestic violence situation is beaten something like 6 or 7 times before she finally A, leaves, or B, gets killed. That's where we are. We can leave. We can refuse to participate with these god-awful, violent thugs that call themselves members of the Republican Party. Or we can go back and we can say, "Hit me again. I can put a little stank on it." That's where we are. From the Claude Allens to the Donald Wildmans and all points in between. See, that's the thing. Donald Wildman will forgive Claude Allen as long as he's not a Homer sectional. These, you know, nothing another baptism won't fix right up. I know some people may get tired of me gooning on the religion industry. But please understand, let me come back to the central point of all of this. Our biggest problem in the world isn't Muhammad. Our biggest problem in the world right now are those who say that they know the will of Christ Jesus. Because they don't worship Christ and they don't follow Christ. They are the, dare we say it, anti-Christs. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Head On.
Hi, this is Guy James. Remember me? As many of you know, I got the boot from the radio stations that carried my show a while back because I got a little too controversial for them to handle. Well, I'm back now, but I'll be doing my show 5 days a week from 3 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time starting on March 20th. You can join us at theguyjamesshow.com or whiterosesociety.org. And if you like hard-hitting, thought-provoking, entertaining radio, then join us starting March 20th at theguyjamesshow.com or whiterosesociety.org for the new Guy James Show.
On the last Fourth Estate, we heard from Robert Fisk.
What has now become a habit of compromising on the semantics of reporting in order to avoid criticism. You know, if you call a Jewish settlement or neighborhood a colony, you'll be criticized and called potentially anti-Semitic.
And a little bit of activist history and the Red Scare.
On the line with us right now, we have Kate Fossil, biographer of Ann Braden.
You know, I got interested in Ann's life because of her being
being a white Southern voice against racism. And
leave it to our listeners to ring up and keep it light.
I don't either. And, you know, Bruce is concerned about the remote control for his DVD player. I mean, I'm thinking about getting rid of the remote control on my blow-up doll. I mean, you know.
What's his name?
I never kiss a gel.
FourthEstateRadio.com.
What's it like?
What's it like?
It's lonely.
It's really lonely.
I miss my brother.
I miss my brother.
I'm surrounded by other people, but it's not the same.
I've got other people around me, but it's not the same.
It's pretty scary, but I don't let it rattle
me. It's scary around here, but I don't let it rattle me.
You always have to watch your back.
There's no one to watch my back.
I spend my whole day worried who's out to get me.
I'm always wondering who's out to get me.
But I can take care of myself.
But I can take care of myself.
No matter what, I'll keep my head up.
No matter what, I'll keep my head up.
It's not like I have a choice.
It's not like I have a choice.
This'll all be over in 5 years, 3 months, and 17 days.
This'll all be over in 5 years, 3 months, and 17 days.
Go to jail for a gun crime and your family serves a sentence with you. Something to think about before committing a gun crime. Gun crimes hit home. This message brought to you by Project Safe Neighborhoods and the Ad Council.
The Cup of Joe Report. I'm Joe Vecchio. Well, if you read the news over the weekend, you'd think that the Bush administration is in serious jeopardy. Senator Russ Feingold is planning on introducing legislation to formally censure Mr. Bush for authorizing illegal wiretaps against U.S. citizens. Also, 30 congressmen and women, all Democrats, have signed a measure looking to open impeachment proceedings. Even Republicans in greater numbers are openly speaking out against Mr. Bush. Don't be fooled. First of all, Feingold's censure in the impeachment proceedings, as they're being introduced by Democrats, will go nowhere. And while Republicans in Congress are making a big show about opposing the president, they're busy putting together legislation that would retroactively legalize all the illegal things the administration's been doing. And, of course, the so-called professional media are still suppressing anti-Republican news. Nearly 500,000 people marched in Chicago over the weekend speaking out against Mr. Bush and other Republicans, yet it received very little attention. Strangely enough, John McCain, who has sometimes been one of the administration's most vocal critics, has suddenly become Bush's best buddy. I get the funny feeling that the GOP and their financial backers are planning on running this moderates in 2008 so that they have a better-looking mask for their anti-American policies. Am I being paranoid? I don't know. With this crowd, it's hard to tell what's really going on. So let's not get fooled by appearances. And let's get back to work. This has been the Cup of Joe Report by Joe Vecchio. Listen to the Cup of Joe radio show, available via streaming audio at cupojoe.blogspot.com.
Living in the wasteland of the free.
He's a man who just loves conservatives, baked, broiled, or fried. Here's Bob Kincaid.
All right. We're halfway through this Monday night, my favorite night of the week. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is Head On. And, you know, hear this. That's what I got for tonight. I got a whole bunch of stuff. And we can go all over the place. I remain just astonished with people like Donald Wildman. You know, I do. And the people, he says he has 2 million followers. When he was walking the dust of Judea, Jesus Christ didn't have 2 million followers. And they weren't really followers so much as people, as students. You know, that we've got mistranslations in the Bible of things like, you know, of them saying, Lord, Lord. They never said Lord, Lord. They said teacher, teacher, rabbi, rabbi. Wildman and Perkins and Dobson, they've got a taste for Lord, Lord, though. Their taste for Lord, Lord extends to trying to get Ford Motor Company to come begging them. Because they're more concerned with their sexual bigotry than they are with the well-being of the United States of America. And I'm sorry I'm on my high horse about this, but damn it, I am. Ford is in trouble. GM is in trouble. And yes, some of it is a matter of self-inflicted wounds. We're seeing the same thing that we saw in the 70s. Auto manufacturers who facing the energy crisis and American desire for more fuel-efficient automobiles said, you know, the new 1973 Detroit crap box. It's bigger. It's heavier. It drinks more gas. And people went, you know, I think I'm going to get one of them Toyotas. They don't drink so much gas. That's gase. G-A-S-E. Gase. And I don't burn all either. All. O-W-L. All. This is... Detroit has problems. You know, Ford might not have the problems it has now if it had been paying attention a few years ago and went out and gone out and developed some hybrid automobiles such as what Toyota did and Honda's doing. Ford might not have the problems it has if it had developed some diesel automobiles besides those great big honking torquey truck diesels that they make. Great engines! Great trucks! But we're talking about the kind of diesel that does you 60 miles a gallon driving to grandma's house. So that part of it is self-inflicted. You know, granted, they do have a hybrid now, the Ford Escape SUV hybrid. God, yeah, we need another SUV. But you see my point. The part of it that is not self-inflicted on Ford's part, well, the religion industry now wants to help out to try to destroy some of the last industry that we have. Whatever's left in America, the people like Donald Wildman want to make sure they take away. Because, you see, people in desperate straits, you got to remember, this has always been the way with the these kinds of religious freaks. They like you when you're desperate. They like you when you've done everything you possibly can do for yourself, and all you can do is rely on them. You know, day in and day out, if you tune in Flush Flimball or the Hannity Job or the Falafel Boy, day in and day out, you'll hear the Democrats want to create a reliance on big government programs. Well, you know, assuming for a moment that that's true, which it ain't, what is it that the Republicans want to create? They want to create reliance on corporate programs, and they want to create reliance on religious programs. Last week, we had the story out from the White House that they're creating the Center for Faith-Based Initiatives inside the Department of Homeland Security, for God's sakes. And a note that Dear Leader killed off the CAFE standard in 2000. Because it's better to burn the oil.
Thank you, Rick.
Thanks, Rick. And a desperate individual who turns, you know, you turn to religion because you're desperate. Guess what? They want to feed your soul. They're not interested in feeding your damn belly. And don't care if your children cry in the night or get sick and can't get medical treatment.
We'll pray for them.
I mean, the Health and Human Resources Secretary Mike Leavitt of Nebraska went before the American Medical Association today talking about the bird flu. And I'm surprised they didn't laugh him out of the freaking room. He was talking to scientists. You know, it was I turned away from it after a while because I wanted to watch the proceedings in the Senate, but I was hoping for the question and answer session where the guy stands up and says, excuse me, Secretary Leavitt, I'm a scientist, and you're talking about the bird flu there, and we've come to understand, of course, that it's not going to be as easy to make up a vaccine for the bird flu if it begins to transmit itself from human to human, because the darn thing is mutating so much. Now, Secretary Leavitt, you understand that when I say mutate, I mean evolve. At which point Mike Leavitt would put his two, you know, little index fingers together in a big cross and point it at the side. You can't say evolution, demon scientist. It was high comedy. Just the very idea that the Bush administration official would address the American Medical Association. Oh, God, make it stop. Okay. I can't figure a lot of people out. Because, again, you know, when they do come up with a bird flu vaccine, the first people in line will be the people who follow Donald Wildman and Dobson and these other creeps who hate working people and hate America. And they'll be standing there with their little sleeves rolled up. They'll bring their own little alcohol prep swabs and then a clean little muscle. Give him a shot there of that evolved. Oh, no. You're putting evolution inside of me. Jesus, help! I'm trying to get a point across here. David talked about us not having our eyes on the ball. Bob talked about how we're the ones who are getting choked. And they're both right, and they're so correct, and they're paying attention. You're paying attention. I'm preaching to the choir right now. I know that. All of that, though. We're getting choked. We got to keep our eye on the ball, eyes on the prize. And do you realize that even with this latest polling data out, that's from the latest CNN USA Today poll, you know, 50 Dear Leaders down to 62%, 38% approval, 36% approval. He's down to 36, which means that 64% of America has awakened. Maybe, but there is 36% of the American people, and this is the part that just makes me want to, start playing music for the rest of the night and go crack something open and take a big swig of it, because 36% of the American people still think America's doing good.
I don't know why they won't give us some more of them happy stories from Iraq. I mean, when you get down to it, that big old mosque of theirs getting blowed up, that was a happy story, because maybe some of them people what would have gone to church and worshipped that there Mohammed in that there mosque, maybe they'll find Jesus now.
Oh, my God. Because, you know, I do that with the funny little voice and whatever, but you realize that's not a parody. That's not satire. Sunshine, that's reality. That person with that voice exists. and they pack into Coral Snake Ministries, and they pack into the mega churches in Tampa and Orlando and Dallas and Colorado Springs and Maryland, where Claude Allen goes to church. They pack that place to the rafters every time the doors open. And when they are told to, they go out and they vote. And they vote. They don't vote their hearts. They don't vote their conscience. They don't vote the. No, they vote what they do what they have been told to do. Bah. Because they are literally sheep. And they are the sheep of the religion industry. They are the sheep of the con artists. And if they're told to go out and destroy the lives of American working people who are just trying to make it to the next damn day, they'll do it. If they're told to go out and put a knife into the heart of a member of the United Auto Workers who makes automobiles for Ford Motor Company, they will do it. That's where we are. That is where the religion industry wants to take us. Can you imagine that? This talk from Russ Feingold, and I should play some Feingold audio, but you know, you probably listened to it. You know what Feingold said. He said that George Bush is a damn crook, and that the Senate should at least come up with the stones to pull his little hand out and smack him on the wrist and say, "Bad, dear leader, bad. Don't spy on us anymore, dear leader. Don't."
I understand some of the things I've done are unpopular, but that's what comes with the territory.
That was today. That's George out talking about what a screwed up mess he's made out of his war in his weekly radio address this past Saturday. He said he was going to be going around America to talk about the war because he realized that there's people out there that might not think it was such a smart thing to do now that we've murdered 150,000 women and children and got 9,000 to 3,000 Americans killed. He understands that. Oh, charming. God almighty. Well, dog, let's go on. Hey. Oh, yeah. One of the other quotes, one of the things I don't have is Bush saying that Iraq is turning away from the abyss. Somebody wrote that for him because that's the first time in his life that that little moron has ever heard the word abyss. Maybe his sinuses is acting up. I got to take abyss, too. The situation in Iraq is still tense, and we're still seeing acts of sectarian violence and reprisal. Yet out of this crisis, we've also seen signs of a hopeful future. Now, like what I said, you know, maybe they'll start going to church instead of them dang mosques now that we've blowed them all up. The Iraqis have shown the world that they want a future of peace. 46 people were killed in Iraq yesterday, and 200 and some odd were wounded in a string of car bombs in Sadr City.
And there it was, the saber rattling. Bush also accused Iran of providing material support to the insurgency in Iraq and vowed to continue to pressure Iraq's neighbor. Such actions, along with Iran's support for terrorism and its pursuit of nuclear weapons, are increasingly isolating Iran, and America will continue to rally the world to confront these threats.
Rally my ass! Who's he rallying? You know, Russia keeps saying,
please, Mr. President, we would like that maybe we should perhaps sit down and talk with the Iranians a little. Maybe we can keep them from with the bomb and the uranium.
And Condoleezza Rice is on a plane over the weekend, and she says, I think we know what we need to do. I think we know what we need to do. That kind of makes me shake a little bit, you know?
Such actions, along with Iran's support for terrorism and its pursuit of what terrorism? No, I know, I know. Iran has a terrorism problem, primarily in the form of their support for one of those Palestinian groups. I can't remember if it's Hezbollah or Hamas or Army of God or Army of the Jelly Donut. You know, one of those groups with the you know, the alligator skin, the dynamite bombs, belts, whatever. I understand. But what they mean when they say support for terrorism, that's where they start trying to scare the American public that some dude in from Frankfurt is going to blow up a Walmart in West Topeka. Are we that stupid? We bought it once. Saddam has a rubber raft, and he's rowing right now, and he's going to put a bomb in London. This is the run-up to the war he's dying, he's itching for. You know, this perpetual case of adult attention deficit disorder that George Bush suffers from. Man, I screwed up in Iraq. Maybe I'll get it right next in Iran. After all, that's just a consonant. N and Q. That's where we are. That is where we are, for God's sakes. They're looking into the abyss. Iraqis have shown the world that they want a future of peace. Oh, wait. This is the good part. I forgot I'd highlighted this one. We saw the restraint of the Iraqi people in the face of massive provocation. Most Iraqis did not turn to violence, and many chose to show their solidarity by coming together in joint Sunni and Shia prayer services. George, buddy, you know what they were praying for in that joint Sunni and Shia prayer service? They were praying for God to drop a big rock on you, buddy. No kidding. They were praying for the Americans to leave them to their own devices. They weren't praying for the American forces to say, no. They weren't praying that they were praying that they would be left to hell alone. That's all they were praying for in that joint prayer service. He said joint. And the poll numbers, oh, for God's sakes, the poll numbers. And interestingly enough, no, the one thing I haven't mentioned out of the poll number, yeah, George Bush is in the tank. 51% of the American people say that if it can be proven that George Bush lied us into the Iraq War, that he should be impeached. And still the Senate Republicans owe greater allegiance to George Bush and Karl Rove than they do to the Constitution. Democrats have the support of 55% of the registered voters, while in regard to a question of who would better handle the battle against terrorism. We've turned the corner. The Dubai ports deal turned the corner for us. The American people finally looked up and said, wait a minute, he's been trying to scare the hell out of us about Arabs trying to come and blow our Walmarts up, and now he's trying to sell the ports to the Arabs that are going to import the stuff that they're going to sell to us at the Walmarts where they're going to blow us up. What the hell is that? And since the Dubai ports deal has gone down, more and more crap in the American media is coming out about, well, we still have a ports problem, Fred, and that ports problem is the mob. The Longshoremen's Union is all mobbed up. And, of course, the Longshoremen's Union says, huh? What? Edith? Huh? But I've seen that story now 3, 4, 5, 6 times bouncing around there trying to get some traction. And in fact, CNN over the weekend, if you missed this, I think it was our buddy Luke in Knoxville told me about this over the weekend when I was producing Fourth Estate. CNN. CNN had an online poll. Who do you trust to run America's ports? A, the Arabs. B, the mob. The mob was up by like 2-1.
There's hope yet?
No, I mean, you know, I think mob, I think Tony Soprano, I think Don Vito Corleone, it's a lot nastier than that. It's the Genoveses and the Gambinos. But the thing is, the Justice Department that's supposed to be out there fighting terrorism is running around, again, trying to hurt working people, longshoremen.
harassing longshoremen who are the front line of defense of so-called, you know, of so-called Arab plots to send bombs on container ships into America, and the damn Justice Department is out there hassling them over whether or not the Genoveses or the Gambinos have a finger in the pie. You know, this is John Ashcroft in 2001 with buildings collapsing from planes flying in them to New York, proudly announcing that they had stopped the threat of prostitution in New Orleans. We've taken that threat to America's security, Tommy Chong of chongsbongs.com, off the streets, and he's in prison. How screwed up can that... Real screwed up. Every damn day when the show ends and I think, well, you know, it doesn't get any... And I go through a weekend and I got Claude Allen running a bunco scheme at Target and he's making $161,000, sunshine, per year of your money. And he's the chief domestic policy advisor for the White House. $161,000 he's making per year of your money, and he's over at the Target returning the Thigh Master to make, an extra $20 on the American Express card. Jesus criminy! And every day, another daggummed indignity. I want the time machine. Sherman, where the hell are you when Mr. Peabody needs you? Set the Wayback Machine for Tom Jefferson and George Washington and Patrick Henry and Thomas Paine and John Adams and Samuel Adams and John Hancock and bring them up here and take them to the capital of the United States and just let them bitch slap a few of these Republicans for a while.
Bad word.
That's hot checks. The Senate was debating today writing $800 billion of hot checks to cover their war ambitions. The phone number is 877, the number 4 head on, 877-443-2366. You want to get in on the final hour, jump in here. Are you as incredulous as I am? This blows my mind. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is Head On.
Kincaid.
What would happen if you didn't follow the established path? If you did the unexpected? Would you feel scared? Proud? Relieved? Could you explain that helping the people of Peru improve their own community would also have an effect on your own? Or assisting an entrepreneur in Ukraine to launch her small business? Or creating a support group in Malawi for children orphaned by AIDS. What if you established your own path? One that others might follow? Would you rather make your own way? Or spend your life saying, what if? Life is calling. How far will you go? Peace Corps. To find out more, call 1-800-424-8580. I go to peacecorps.gov.
Head On Radio Network News, I'm Bruce Birch. Senator Russ Feingold earns new title, Senator No. The senator from Wisconsin, Russ Feingold, today presented a resolution of censure on the U.S. Senate floor. This resolution explicitly condemns the illegal wiretapping of U.S. citizens that the Bush administration has been doing since just after September the 11th, 2001.
That we're going to let the President of the United States break the law of this nation and not do anything about it. Now that's a victory for the terrorists. If we won't even stand up for our system of government, because everybody has to be afraid to mention that this president broke the law.
Feingold's censure resolution was rebuffed by several Republicans, including Jeff Sessions of Alabama, who attempted to play the patriotism card to invalidate the censure argument.
I think back on a young Senator Inouye serving in our military, putting his life at risk and nearly losing it for our country. One thing he had a right to expect of his Congress was that though as a soldier he would be supported in the conflict.
No time has yet been set for a vote on the resolution. Government becomes more secretive. National Security Advisor Stephen Hadley quietly revised the guidelines for determining access to classified government information last year, increasing emphasis on allegiance to the United States and allowing the government broader latitude in rejecting candidates without a clearly articulated cause. In December 2005, revision of the adjudicative guidelines for determining eligibility for access to classified information, Hadley made semantic but substantial changes which seemed to mirror a broader shift in Bush administration policy. The Justice Department pulled the personal financial records of at least 9 members of Congress and at least 7 former staffers last summer and fall, many of whom have been identified publicly as having links to ex-lobbyist Jack Abramoff. Roll Call reported Monday. In a stretch running from June to October, a pair of aides at Justice examined the financial disclosure forms of Senator Conrad Burns, Representatives Tom DeLay, John Doolittle, and Bob Ney, as well as ex-staffers for 3 of those lawmakers, all Republicans, according to House and Senate records. In addition, the agency looked over the financial records of several lawmakers who had no public connection to the investigation. Jim McDermott, Democrat of Washington, Earl Pomeroy, Democrat of North Dakota, Eliana Rose-Lenitin of Florida, Republican, John Sweeney, Republican of New York, as well as Delegate Eni Falinamavega, Democrat from American Samoa. This is news from the Horn, Head On Radio Network News.
Now, Mrs. Johnson, before we close on your mortgage loan, I want to make sure you remember Mike.
Hi. You can trust me. I'm African-American, just like you.
So, here's the low monthly payments and interest rates we promised, and here's where they triple.
The rest of this stuff is just here to make sure that we get your house when you can't pay us back.
What a lovely house.
Predatory lenders are never this easy to spot. Call us at 866-222-FAIR and protect yourself with the facts. A public service announcement brought to you by the National Fair Housing Alliance and the Ad Council.
Maggie Inouye, wife of Senate Commerce Committee Chairman Daniel Inouye, Democrat of Hawaii, died today after a long illness. Minority Leader Harry Reid of Nevada said Inouye would be absent for a while as he accompanies his wife's body back to Hawaii. Reid said the couple had been married for 57 years, with Inouye proposing on the second date. President Bush's approval rating has sunk to a new low, according to a USA Today CNN Gallup poll released today. The latest results show only 36% of those polled say they approve of the way Bush is handling his job. Bush's previous low was 37% set last November. 60% of those polled said they disapprove of Bush's performance. That matches an all-time worst rating hit last November and again 2 weeks ago. Greenwich, Connecticut businessman Ned Lamont entered Connecticut's U.S. Senate race Monday to challenge U.S. Senator Joseph Lieberman for the Democratic nomination. Lamont's challenge is the first Lieberman has faced from within his party during his 18 years in office. Lamont hopes to garner the support of Connecticut Democrats who have expressed dissatisfaction with Lieberman's pro-war stance in Iraq and his perceived closeness with President Bush's administration. Rumors in Iraq have a weight that government and even newspaper reports don't seem to carry, and the latest rumors suggest Iraqis believe a civil war is imminent and that the United States secretly wants it to happen. That suggestion is contained in the March 10th edition of The Baghdad Mosquito, a daily collection of open-source intelligence culled from Iraqi newspapers as well as rumors from a group of knowledgeable Iraqis. According to the bulletin, one of the rumors making the rounds is that U.S. Central Command Chief General John Abizaid's expectation that more shrines would be attacked before the violence is over prove that these attacks are part of an American plan. For Head On Radio Network News, I'm Bruce Birch.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Bob.
Okie dokie. Refilled the root beer. All better now. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is Head On. Keep it together, Bob. Keep it together, Bob. Keep it together, Bob. Let's go to the phones. Surest way to keep me from having a hissy. Go to the phones. Peter is with us from Tallahassee. Hey, Peter, you're Head On.
Hey, Bob, it's so good to talk to you. I love you guys so much. You just make my day.
Well, thank you. Great to hear from you.
You know, so much of what you said, these people, you know, it's like a bunch of gangsters, you know, when they commit a robbery and they all get their story together and then, you know, they know that if they get busted, they're all going to stick to their story. It seems like the deeper in doo-doo these people get, the more they cling to the standard party line.
Oh, that's exactly what it is. I mean, did you see any of this stuff this afternoon, Peter?
I was able to see some of it. It's been kind of a busy day, but yes, I did switch over to CNN and catch some of the outrage, the Republican outrage at what he was trying to do about the censure. And the censure is the very least that could...
It's nothing. It's nothing. It doesn't even exist constitutionally.
Yeah, yeah. It was amazing. It was amazing. The outrages come day after day after day, and one of the things that set me off this morning, and I've been brooding about it all day. You know, I've been calling and going on about this Ave Maria town. That's
been yeah.
Yeah, by the Domino's pizza guy. Okay, so he's a multimillionaire. And he's building Ave Maria. It's a town, and it's planned community. No condoms. No. The cable TV will be censored. The pharmacies won't be able to sell birth control. It will house a new Catholic university. I think it's the first one built in 40 years. Well, in any case, PBS, the public radio station here in Tallahassee, was running, I guess, kind of a regional coverage thing, and they were interviewing some of the students down there at Ave Maria. So they interviewed this guy. He's 18 years old.
Okay.
And he says, and I can almost quote it word for word, "I don't believe that condoms are effective in any way. And so to promote them is not the right thing to do, blah, 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 blah," he goes on. But if you decode that, "I don't believe that condoms are effective in any way," the word...
There's that word I hate.
Right, yeah. The word "believe" also indicates to me that he's been exposed to the truth. He just chooses not to believe it.
That's exactly what that means, Peter.
And you know, it's just amazing to me the way they're able to warp kids' minds with this sweetness and kindness stuff.
Yeah, I don't believe a smallpox vaccine will keep smallpox from striking me.
Right, because God didn't make it, or, you know, Moses didn't deliver it, or whatever. And, you know, these people probably don't listen to Rush Limbaugh. I mean, that's just so evil. I mean, anybody can pick up on the hate speech and that. But they're such suckers to the sweetness and light presentation that goes on within the church.
Well, and they're also subject to some meanness, too, Peter. They may not listen to Flush Limbaugh or the Hannity Job, or, you know, Falafel Boy is a good Roman Catholic, even though he wants to, I mean, loofahs and never mind.
Yeah, whatever. They, I don't know. I've yet to figure that out.
But
don't explain it, please. I couldn't handle it.
Right. neither could I. But what we're dealing with, you know, no, maybe they're not listening to those clowns. They're listening to worse. You know, they've got Brother William Donahue of the American Catholic League. And this guy is just a pure hate monger. I mean, he screams at other people, "Shut up, shut up, shut up." You know, he's one of those people.
Oh, one of the shut up people.
Yeah, one of that crowd. And then, you know, then there's the Pizza Padre Monahan, who owns Domino's, and he's building this heaven on earth.
I think I see Mary weeping on my pineapple pizza.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Can you imagine the money he's going to make? You know, Mary, the Virgin Mary on every third pizza, delivery in 30 minutes or less, or your absolution's free.
Oh, it's tragic. It's just tragic. And then to top it all off, the other thing that had me screaming in the car, my poor doggy staring at me from the passenger seat, was they're doing some local coverage on Eon Sancho, and you may have heard his name before.
I know who Eon Sancho is.
Yes, and he's becoming pretty much nationally known as being one of the supervisors of election in the country that's standing up to these voting machines people. Now, of course, you probably also know that, at the end of last year, he ran unauthorized tests on the D-Bowl system. You know, that one of the things you have to sign in the contract is that you won't independently test it.
I promise I will not pull the curtain back and look at the wizard.
Exactly. So Ian Sancho goes, yeah, right. So anyway, he sets this stuff up according to the instruction book and has some computer people come in. And within minutes, they hack the memory card. This, I guess it's a... like a little flash card.
It's a little, yeah, it's a little flash memory card. The same card is in the moisture tester for a corn moisture tester.
Corn?
Corn, yeah.
That's a hoot.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I got a slot for a flash memory card in the printer I'm looking at right here, Peter.
Yeah.
You know, but, you know, I mean, I guess I could take the flash memory card with all the voting results that I wanted and a couple of pictures of the family vacation and slide it into a D-Bulb machine. Honest to God, you can do it.
Honest to God. And they flipped the election by manipulating that memory, the flash memory card, with absolutely zero traceability in minutes. And, of course, at this point in time, you know, we're supposed to have a new contract here in Land County, and the deadline, I think, it was January of this year. In any case, I might be wrong, but that might have been February.
Well, the best part of it was Diebold, after Sancho did this, Peter, Diebold, you're cheating.
Well, yes.
That's no fair. We're going to sue you.
Yes, and they're refusing to sell the equipment. Now, on top of those, the other three manufacturers, Sequoia and then there's ESS, or is that the same as Sequoia? I guess.
No, ES&S and Diebold are both owned. That's owned by the pair of right-wing fundamentalist Dominionist brothers.
Well, in any case, all three of the big fraud machine makers are refusing to sell to Leon County until Sancho, till quote, they get rid of Sancho. I mean, it's outrageous. Here you've got a federal law requiring the machines, and there are only three manufacturers privately owned that make them, and they have the right to refuse to sell. Excuse me?
No, I know. Yeah, and the thing is, what was it, a week ago? I get the little updates from Brad Friedman at bradblog.com.
Yeah.
I think it was a week ago, some little election somewhere in Florida. I do believe it was Florida, Peter, where a guy was running for office, went into the Diebold booth, voted for himself, and came out, and his vote got flipped.
Just like that, huh? Didn't like the way he touched the machine.
Yeah, well, you know.
Don't touch me there. It's all so outrageous.
And, Mr. Election Supervisor, the voter touched me funny.
Touched me funny. I bet he sleeps on the homosex.
The Homer sectional, that's
and
right.
So today here in Leon County at the gray building, it's the man's name anyway, they have this big meeting where they summon Sancho in, and they basically the state of Florida is giving the man hell and trying, like, desperately to get rid of him. Now, there was a person who tried to attend that. His name is Ratcliffe, and I'm sorry, I can't tell you exactly what his function is in government, but whatever the rules are, if he had attended the meeting, it would have forced the meeting to be an open meeting or a public access, you know, not behind closed doors thing. So rather than allow him to sit in on this meeting, they barred him from the meeting so that it could not be reported on and was closed doors. Now, the lobby outside the meeting room was jam-packed with reporters, and I haven't read any coverage on it at this point in time. But no doubt they grilled the man and were relentless. He should be praised for finding a huge hole and another lie from what should be a secure voting system.
You would think.
And Florida is ripping him to shreds with Jeb Bush riding the pirate ship at the end and with slashing his sword, doing the whole bit.
Yeah, well, I mean, he's doing Eon Sancho's doing the Paul Revere stuff.
Yes, you know, yes, he is.
The vote stealers are coming. The vote stealers are coming.
Yes, he
actually,
is.
They're already here.
Yes, he is. In any case, tonight I'm going to do a Google News search on Eon Sancho and see what I can find out of the latest. And if anyone's interested, his name is I-O-N.
Yeah, I-O-N.
Yeah, Sancho, like the common...
Yeah, like Sancho Panza.
Yeah. So,
well,
anyway...
And the thing is, as you're Googling, I'll bet you the very latest is probably over at bradblog.com, Peter.
Well, it wouldn't surprise me.
Just head on over to Brad's blog.
Yeah, Brad stays on this probably better than any other blogger in the country, bar none.
Well, God bless him. He's something else, isn't he?
Yeah, he is. He's a great guy. He's been on the show a number of times. I took over from him for the great big filibuster for the filibuster in the middle of the night here. We had a heck of a fun time.
Yeah, and there's just so much just unbelievably nasty stuff going on. There was an interview recently on a radio program, don't recall where I heard it, but he's an author, and he has written a book critical of the Bush administration and went to book an airline ticket shortly after that. He's on the no-fly list. He'll remain there, too. You can't get off of it.
No.
You can't say a word against these bastards without being punished in some way.
Well, that's because they're mean and vindictive, and they ascribe to that that theory that says, I don't care if you like me as long as you fear me.
Well, yeah.
What a rotten way to go through the world.
Yeah, yeah. You know, you could just imagine the parenting that these people grew up with to believe that shit.
Ah, there's that word. Ah, we'll let it go, Peter.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Oh, that's okay.
Oh, I thought you were objecting to parroting, and then I realized what I said.
Just open your mouth, and little bats fly out. No, that's what happens when you talk about these clowns.
I'm so sorry. I apologize.
No, that's all right. That's all right. You know, when we get picked up by the great big radio corporation of America, we'll worry about it. But right now, we're free as a bird, and we're on the internet.
You know, this just tells me I need to rehearse before I make these calls.
Bad caller. Bad.
Bad.
Don't use the brown word.
I'm going to go to hell. So anyway, I just have to call you periodically and tell you everything that upset the hell out of me that day.
Well, it's good for you. You know, this is the radio therapy that we have been yearning for 20 freaking years, Peter.
Yes. Dr. Kincaid and Nurse Dangerous.
Yeah, exactly. You know, Brother Bob's Cathedral of Common Sense, and you know, and Sister Agnes of the Holy Wrath.
Right, and the kids sell tickets and everything. It's this whole family business.
Yeah, they dance during the break and pass the hat. Yeah.
On the front porch.
I knew a man, Bojangles, and he danced for you. Get moving, kid.
Oh, God. I love progressives. We are just as warped as they come.
Oh, you know, we got to do this. And I appreciate you helping me lighten up a little bit because, you know, between Donald Wildman trying to destroy Ford Motor Company and Jeff Sessions feasting on the flesh of Mrs. Inouye, God almighty, a fella could get kind of down in the dumps, Peter.
You know, and it's just so stupid. If you pick up magazines, what are they? There's like, I don't know, Out. I'm sure there's a bunch of them. I honestly don't get any of the magazines.
Well, there's like the Washington Blade and, you know.
Yeah, yeah. There are ads for a hell of a lot more than just cars. I mean, there's ads for Absolute Vodka and travel. And
well, you know how it is with them Homer sectionals. They's drinking that Absolute all the time. It was that Swedish vodka what made them gay in the first place.
I know, and there's ads for those spoonful gay cruises. Imagine that. And,
soap.
You know.
Soap. There's probably Ivory and Palm Olive soap ads, and you know how it is with Palm Olive. I mean...
Yeah, Queen and Curler say you're soaking in it. Just
match with it.
You know, Donald Wildman, don't buy Ivory soap. They're selling soap to the Homer sectionals.
You might catch it. Oh, dear Lord. Well, I didn't have much, but what I had was just...
Oh, yes, you did. You had more than you knew, Peter.
Well, I have enjoyed the show, and you guys take care.
Thank you so much.
Yes, sir. Good night.
Bye now.
Bye, Agnes.
Yeah, you do know that early on, you know, back when they were just, you know, sort of feeling their oats in the early days, I believe it was the American Family Association that started a boycott. Yeah, really, not kidding. You probably already know this. A boycott against Colgate-Palmolive Company of Cincinnati, Ohio, because they had a crescent moon and some stars as their logo. Do you remember this? And Donald Wildman said, "Yea, verily, bring me my snake that I may handle him. Thou shalt not purchase the Colgate Palm Olive. Thou shalt not brush thy teeth nor wash thy body, for that moon and sixpence logo is a sign of Satan."
But I thought he was a
No, really, that's what they said. It's a sign of Satan. Don't buy Colgate Palmolive products. No Colgate toothpaste, no Palmolive soap, none of that, because they're engaged in the worship of Satan at Colgate Palmolive. Now, that's them. Why would you think that there's anything?
I thought Chatty Snake started all this.
Yeah, Chatty Snake did get it all started for us. A gossipy water moccasin. What are you going to do? Okay. I want to talk about something here real quick. An article that our friend Sue in the UK alerted me to from the Telegraph. I'm guessing this hasn't really shown up on Fox yet. Has it shown up on CNN? I don't watch enough TV. I rely on you guys. An SAS soldier, and someone, one of our UK listeners can tell me what SAS actually, Special Armed Services or something, the Special Forces of the Army of the UK. An SAS soldier has refused to fight in Iraq and has left the army over the illegal tactics of the United States troops and the policies of coalition forces. Now this, I mean, there's a picture of this guy here. His name's Ben Griffin. This guy's a hero. Okay? I mean, we're not talking about some dude with a tie-dyed T-shirt and a long ponytail and earrings everywhere and piercings through his whatevers and, you can see the waves of patchouli rolling off of him, okay? This is just a straight-up guy. After 3 months in Baghdad, Ben Griffin told his commander that he was no longer prepared to fight alongside American forces. And, you know, we're not talking about a bunch of cheese-eating surrender monkeys here. Remember how they talked about the French who are fighting side-by-side with us in Afghanistan as we speak? This is one of those guys that, you know, the training, you know, you go out for 3 weeks and they don't give you food and water and you have to eat bugs and survive hardcore, probably teach us a few things. He said he had witnessed, quote, dozens of illegal acts by U.S. troops claiming they viewed all Iraqis as, and this is a quote, Untermenschen, unquote. That's the Nazi term for races regarded as subhuman. Well, you know what he means by Untermenschen. Of course you do, because in boot camp they train our American soldiers to call the people that we're slaughtering in Iraq Hajis. The decision marks the first time an SAS soldier has refused to go into combat and quit the army on moral grounds. This guy wasn't afraid, by the way. He had been in Northern Ireland, he'd been in Macedonia, he'd been in Afghanistan, had an 8-year career in which he served with the parachute regiment. Now, this guy had the right stuff. We're the ones that had the wrong stuff. Our buddy Andy is calling us from the UK, from Wales. Hey, Andy, you're head on.
Hey, Bob, how's it going?
Doing good.
Yeah, I was just ringing up to tell you about the SAS. They're like, they're basically the best of the best, as it were.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're in the SAS, you have to, like, complete something like 60-mile hike over 48 hours over some of the roughest terrain in Britain in the winter.
And there is some rough terrain in Britain in the winter, no doubt about it.
Oh, yeah, up on the Brecon Beacons up in Wales, not too far from where I am, it's dangerous in wintertime sort of weather, I guess, you know, like the hills around you, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I mean, this guy's properly hard. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Is he getting
one tough, mean killer type?
Yeah. Good guy to have at your back in a fight.
Oh, yeah, yeah, for sure. I mean, you don't get into the SAS without having served, like, at least sort of, I think it's 6 or 7 years in one of the fairly hardcore regiments. We've got a few like the paras and the marines and stuff. You know, you've got to be one of the best of them before you'll even be considered. I mean, I've got a couple of cousins who are pretty tough, and one of them just wasn't quite tough enough. He missed it by about 30 seconds or something. He was behind the time.
Oh, you miss it by a matter of seconds?
Oh, you miss it by seconds. Yeah, tough boy.
Oh, wow. Well, is Brian Griffin getting a lot of coverage? Or Ben Griffin?
Well, it hasn't been out that long. And to be honest with you, they tend to try and keep all these things quiet. I mean, the Telegraph's a good one for exposing stuff.
Well, the interesting...
I dare say Channel 4 and BBC News will pick it up in the next day or so, but it has only just kind of come out, you know?
Well, the interesting thing about this is that
You know, after Mr. Griffin said that he could no longer participate with American soldiers because of the way they treated other human beings, he expected to get dinged pretty hard. He said he figured he'd get a dishonorable discharge and be called a coward and things. Instead, what he got, Andy, and I'm sure you know this, this is what they said on his discharge paper. This was according to Patrick Mercer, the shadow minister for Homeland Security. This is a quote: "Trooper Griffin is a highly experienced soldier. This makes his decision particularly disturbing, and his views and opinions must be listened to by the government."
Yeah, well, I mean, that's our opposition. You can rely on the conservatives.
Oh, okay, that's the opposite. Oh, shadow minister. Should have caught that. Sorry, my bad.
Yeah, I mean, the Ministry of Defense are going to have to shut up, because if they come down hard on him, the whole of the British people are going to be like, right, okay, who do we like, the SAS or the government? The SAS. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's not a hard choice. Who's done stuff for us? SAS. Who's got people killed for us? Well, the government, damn it. You know? So,
yeah, I know.
I don't imagine he's going to have anything tough done to him. I mean, have you noticed have you heard that we're withdrawing troops from Iraq?
Yes. 800 troops going, Andy?
Yeah, that's 10%.
Wow.
And apparently there's 110 Iraqi battalions capable of dealing with whatever.
Is that what they're saying over there, Andy? 110?
That's the MOD's official figures, you know. It's not what people actually think, but that's the official figures.
I guess, you know, that's like the U.S. Army slogan over here, an army of one. I guess, you know, one Iraqi to the battalion.
Yeah, probably. I mean, I don't understand how, you know, the whole situation is ridiculous. But I think what we're doing in the South is just getting ready to get out, you know.
Yeah. But the sad thing is, if anything blows up before then, you're the ones who are right next to Iran.
Yeah, absolutely. We're the ones who are going to have to hold the gates open for you guys to escape as
well.
While we
see you later.
Yeah. Oh, we probably get shot by your retreating troops.
That's the thing. You know, you hear all these speeches from dear leader Andy about, you know, our good friend and partner Great Britain. The fact of the matter is, he would sell the British military out in a Texas second.
Oh well, yeah. I mean, just look at the number of, you know, UK soldiers killed over the last like 20 years by Americans. It's ridiculous. I mean, you know, Gulf War Part One. I mean, I had a cousin involved in that. He was in the Air Force, and they were told to fly, you know, over this area, drop some bombs here, fly back this way. And they were told on the way in, okay, it's clear, we've checked that out. The Americans have told us it's absolutely clear. On the way out, we checked that ourselves, it's fine. And on the way in, he and, I don't know, it was like six other planes in his flight of 12 got like, you know, full of shrapnel. Because the intelligence hadn't been done right, you know what I mean? The Americans really don't really care about their allies. And that's not to say you Americans, that's to say the American military. Mm-hmm. But of course, it all comes from the top, doesn't it? And who's at the top? Rumsfeld and Bush.
Well, but the thing is, there seems to be a little bit of truth-telling sneaking out even in the majority government over there. What's his name? Old doggone it. Kim Howells, Foreign Office Minister, came back just a few days ago and admitted that Iraq is, these are his words, a mess. I mean,
he's quite plain spoken anyway. I don't think he was particularly pro-war in the first place. I mean, we've had quite a few people resign from the government, you know, over the war. I mean, Robin Cook, who died just not too long ago, he was very opposed, you know, and he was a great sort of speaker against it and stuff. But, yeah, you know, I mean, Blair's holding on there still, and I mean...
He's holding on like grim death, isn't he, Andy?
Well, yeah, he's not as unpopular as Bush, but, you know, our economy isn't as bad as yours, and we're not, like, perpetually in debt and stuff, so that helps, you know. But, I mean, given that only, like, 33% of 40% of the population supported him in the first place to elect him, yeah, he's not exactly popular now. I mean, the vast majority of the British people are kind of disinterested, you know.
Well, this is all very interesting, what's taking place in your country, Andy, because... I guess a court-martial is kicking up this week for a Royal Air Force doctor.
Yeah, he refused to serve as well on the... I mean, he took advice from a solicitor and was told if he served, he was a war criminal. So he said, I can't serve. My solicitor says, I'm a war criminal.
And the sad thing is, I mean, this isn't some sissy man who's refusing to go the first time. He only said no after the second, when they tried to send him back for the third go-round.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he'd been, and I mean, I believe he served in the first one anyway.
Yeah.
If not, I'm fairly sure he's been in a couple of combat zones, he would have probably been in Kosovo or in Bosnia during the 90s. So, he was a doctor. I mean, he's operated on combat wounded and stuff, and he's done his bit. And, he's absolutely convinced, and so are most of us, that it's illegal. And if it's illegal, that makes him a war criminal. He wants to be a war criminal.
No, I'm not up for it. We've apparently got an entire government or a part of the government over here that is up for it. War criminal, no problem, because nobody can hang it on us because nobody can get to us.
Well, yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's what Rumsfeld et al. Have been up to since, the year dot, as far as I can tell, I mean, it's just too simple to say, oh, they're killers. I mean, they are, and that's quite simple, but... it goes deeper than that. I mean, they really are absolutely psychotic.
Yeah. They know there's nothing anybody can do about it. It's the old schoolyard taunt, Andy. What are you going to do about it?
Well, yeah, because they know that if nothing else, the Supreme Court's going to be tied up with legal wrangles long enough for them to all die anyway. So it's not like they're ever going to get punished for this, is it?
Right. Exactly. Andy, thank you so much. I appreciate you clearing stuff up for us.
Okay. No worries. Have a good one, man.
You too. Bye now.
See you soon. Bye, mate.
Okay, let's take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll take it downhill to the end of the show. 877, the number 4, head on, 877-443-2366. This is Head On. You know who I am, Bob Kincaid.
Lottie in the chat room has fixed himself some stuffed pork chops with apple raisin walnut chuck.
You, me, Grace, Rama.
Mango chuckney.
Hey, speaking of that,
it's all you need.
Mustard seed?
Mustard seed, yeah. That article.
It's not the same as mustard gas.
Well, it's pretty close. Mustard gas.
Join
mustard
Grace
gas.
And Rama, Homebodies, Sunday evenings, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern, right here on the Head On Radio Network. It's food for thought.
This is Bruce Birch, and if you missed my show Sunday night, here's what I got up to. A group of U.S. businessmen in the UAE said they will invite the Oprah Winfrey Show and other talk shows to the Gulf to change American public opinion, which has helped block Dubai's takeover of 6 U.S. ports. He's saying that they want to reach out to the average guy in the United States and explain why the UAE is important. If you want to reach out to the average guy in the United States, they need to send... something, not Oprah. I mean, how many average guys do you know watch Oprah? I don't. If they want to reach out to the average guy in the United States, as much as I hate to say it, they need to send Jerry Springer and the Jerry Springer Show over there with the bald guy. Maybe they can do a UAE version of My Grandmother Is Also My Lover or something like that. Oh, that's just a... Join me, Bruce Birch, for All Things Reconsidered every Sunday evening, 7 p.m. Pacific, 10 p.m. Eastern, allthingsreconsidered.org.
One, two... One, two, three, four.
Chief Joseph,
because liberals built America. Head On with Bob Kincaid.
On the godforsaken Oklahoma day, he saw a purple sunrise through the mountain mist. He felt his first wife give him a perfect holy kiss. Her face was shining brilliant in a sky of blue, and her smile told him he had no more to lose.
I love this album. Jason Ringgenberg, formerly of Jason and the Scorchers, came out, what, a year and a half or so ago? Empire Builder. If you add it to your collection, you will be very, very, very glad that you did. Odds and ends and bits and pieces, stuff that might or might not have caught your attention. Judge rules victim provoked death with racial slur. This is not out of West Virginia. This is out of Hawaii. A judge ruled last Tuesday that a man who was killed in a fight with a neighbor had provoked his own death. Kendall Edmonds apparently killed his neighbor Michael Gillum with a single punch. The confrontation started over noise from Edmonds' Pearl City apartment that was keeping Gillum and his daughter awake. What happened, though, what developed, Gillum was all drunked up. And prosecutors wanted Edmonds sentenced to 20 years for manslaughter, but his lawyer pointed out that Gillum was drunk, demanded a fight, and used a racial slur to provoke it. The lawyer, William Bento, said, "For a young African-American man from Alabama, those words are very serious." This is the America that we're devolving to. The guy came up, tried to provoke a fight, screaming about loud music, and you know the word he used. I won't use it. I know some people will occasionally use it to make a point. I'd prefer the word didn't exist. I won't. But this white dude did, and he got punched once, and he died for it. This is the America we're headed for. Because the Claude Allen story, Claude Allen, chief domestic policy advisor to George Bush, evangelical whose brothers and sisters in the church won't believe the videotape that shows him ripping off stores with a bogus refund scam, Claude Allen. In 1994, when Claude Allen, who is an African-American himself, when Claude Allen was working for, sit back, wait for it, it's just too doggone good, back in 1994, when Claude Allen was working as a staffer for Senator Jesse Helms, we'll take a minute now while you just absorb that. While he was working for Senator Jesse Helms, he referred to people who have sex presumably differently than he as queers. And then came back and said, "Well, I didn't mean it as a slur. I suppose Mr. Gillum, before he got his lights punched out, didn't mean the word he used as a slur either." Mr. Gillum's dead. They tried to put Mr. Edmonds in prison because when he heard, a young man raised in Alabama, heard that word carried a couple of hundred years of freight behind it, and ostensibly sort of transferred into the kinetic energy behind the force of that punch. This is the America we are devolving into. This is the America that is the future of my little children, your children, your grandkids, the neighbor kids that play ball in your yard. That America
This is it. And Claude Allen, now Mr. Edmonds, who responded to the slur, got literally tried for his life. 20 years is a life sentence for most people. He got tried for his life in Hawaii. Claude Allen, bunko artist. Claude Allen, who made $161,000 a year. Your money? It's your money. Claude Allen was, this is the best part, Claude Allen was nominated for a seat on the United States Circuit Court of Appeals. Maybe District Court. Federal judgeship, either way you slice it. George Bush nominated a bigot. Well, hell, they're all bigots. Samuel Alito. They're going to let women come to Princeton. Ew, girls at school. Ick, cooties. They're all bigots. Claude Allen is a bigot. He was nominated to a federal judgeship. He, in fact, was one of those people that Bill Frist was hopping up and down, hollering, he's a good man and he deserves an up-a-down vote. He needs an up-a-down vote. George Bush, to whom I swore an oath of allegiance, wouldn't nominate nobody that didn't deserve an up-a-down vote. Claude Allen got stopped because some Democrats found out about his little Mark Furman moment. Found out about when he worked with Jesse Helms and he talked about the queers. There is no end to the hate that these people are capable of. But Mr. Edmonds got tried for his life. In Republican world, you get a promotion. $161,000 a year, and this freak has to run a bunko scam. Look 'em, Dano. This freak has to run a bunko scam at the local Target store over in Maryland. Do you begin to see what we're dealing with? Of course, Claude Allen, he's not going to be showing up on Focus on the Family anytime soon with Brother Dobson. Nah, I guess not. Guess not. Not going to hear of him again. He's just sort of going to get, off to the little Dasha and the gulag. They're crooks. They're criminals. I mean, you want... Oh, hell, let's do this for just a second. Let's see what we got here.
In this year's State of the Union, no court has ever, ever approved warrantless surveillance in violation of FISA. The President's claims of inherent executive authority and his assertions that the courts have approved this type of activity are baseless. But it's one thing to make a legal argument that has no real support in the law. It is much worse to do what the president has done.
It is one thing to make an argument that has no support in the law. It is much worse to do what the president has done. That's Russ Feingold from earlier today. And the thing is, that quote's got a few hundred boxcars worth of freight behind it, too, because that's not just talking about domestic spying. That's George Bush in every daggum thing he has done in his entire illegitimate presidency. What he has done is indeed much worse. No kidding.
And Mr. President, he could point me to no court, not the Supreme Court or any other court, that has considered whether after FISA was enacted, the President nonetheless had the authority to bypass it and authorize warrantless wiretaps. Not one court.
Not one court. He's talking about his interrogation, his gentle questioning of Alberto Torturador, Alberto Torquemada Gonzalez, the Attorney General of the United States, torture boy, for short, to use Bart Kopp's nickname for him. He sat there and asked him, can you point out to me a single court case that says that what you say about George Bush spying on Americans is legal? Not one. Now, Feingold did note that he ran off and said, well, you know, George Washington, and you heard Alberto Gonzalez. He said George Washington authorized electronic eavesdropping. He said it. But not since 1967, not since the Supreme Court ruled that the government couldn't just indiscriminately wiretap anyone. There is not one case in the decisional law of the United States of America that says that it's okay to spy on Americans, wiretap Americans, without a warrant. Not one.
The administration's effort to find support for what it has done in snippets of other court decisions would be laughable if this issue were not so serious. In the same speech, the president referred to other presidents in American history who cited executive authority to order warrantless surveillance. But of course, Mr. President, those past presidents, like Wilson and Roosevelt, were acting long before the Supreme Court decided in 1967 that our communications are protected by the Fourth Amendment, and before Congress decided in 1978 that the executive branch could no longer unilaterally decide which Americans to wiretap.
See?
So I asked the Attorney General about this issue when he testified before the Judiciary Committee. And neither he nor anyone else in the administration has been able to come up with a single prior example of wiretapping inside the United States since 1978 that was conducted outside of FISA's authorization. So again, the President's arguments in the State of the Union were baseless. And it is unacceptable that the President of the United States would so obviously mislead the Congress and the American public. The President has also argued that periodic internal executive branch review provides an adequate check on that program. He has even characterized this periodic review as a safeguard for civil liberty. But we don't know what this check involves, and we do know that Congress explicitly rejected the idea of unilateral executive decision-making in this area when it passed FISA.
Yeah, we do. Now, compare that with something else. Let me see if I can get this here for you. I want to, you know, just because it's one of those things that's worth hanging on to. And this is what did I call it once upon a time? This is George Bush's rope line moment. Remember the interminable video that we had to watch over and over and over again of Bill Clinton hugging Monica Lewinsky, as if that meant something. Well, that's what this is. This is the rope line moment.
Anytime you hear the United States government talking about wiretap, a wiretap requires a court order. Nothing has changed, by the way. When we're talking about chasing down terrorists, we're talking about getting a court order before we do so.
He said that. He said that. In Buffalo, New York, he said that. At the very same time that he was actively engaged in spying on the American people.
Anytime you hear the United States government talking about wiretap, a wiretap requires a court order. Nothing has changed, by the way. When we're talking about chasing down terrorists, we're talking about getting a court order before we do so.
You dirty little liar. Everything has changed. I don't know. I don't know who they spy on. I don't know if I'm on the no-fly list. Are you on the no-fly list? Have you been to a peace rally lately? You think you might show up for an anniversary gathering marking the start of this offensive war that violates every principle of Nuremberg? You think you might show up for that? Guess what? When you do, have a look around. Look to the periphery. See if there's some goon there with a video camera. Odds are, even if he's from your local law enforcement, odds are he has been sent there. Yea, verily, he has been sent there by the Department of Homeland Security because you, a peacenik, someone who does not approve of war, are more to be feared by George Bush, who fears all things, than is an armed militiaman holed up somewhere in God knows Idaho or some such with a house full of guns and grenades and grenade launchers and but you get my point. Quakers are scarier to the Bush administration than what, anarchists? Quakers are scarier, people who've been third way, peace, that whole thing. They are scarier to the Bush administration than people who actively seek war. And I guess there's a little bit of sense to that, too, because people who don't seek war, people who oppose war, well, they're not as easy to deal with as the people who do. You say, something stupid like, I want to make war on the United States or something like that. Well, they'll just come down and hogtie your ass and send you to Guantanamo Bay, and that's the end of you, baby. But what do you do about people who sit in a circle and quote Jesus Christ and the Buddha and Lao Tzu and the Chief Joseph, I will fight no more forever? What do you do with those people? I guess maybe if you live in Bush world, they are the threat.
Now, finally, the president has tried to claim this one, that informing a handful of congressional leaders, the so-called Gang of Eight, somehow excuses breaking the law. Of course, several of these members said they weren't even given the full story, and all of them were prohibited from discussing what they were told. So the fact that they were informed under these extraordinary circumstances does not constitute congressional oversight, and it most certainly does not constitute congressional approval of the program. In fact, Mr. President, it doesn't even comply with the National Security Act, which requires the entire memberships of the House and Senate Intelligence Committee to be, quote, fully and currently informed of the intelligence activities of the United States, unquote. Nor does the latest agreement to allow a 7-member committee to review the program comply with the law. Granting a minority of the committee access to information is inadequate and still does not comply with the law requiring that the full committee be fully informed.
Now, just in case you think that, I'm not giving you full disclosure and I'm only playing you the peaceful parts and not the parts where he was a-hopping up and down and flapping his arms and screaming and frothing at the mouth and turning all red in the face and screaming about George Bush being a war criminal like I do on this program, just in case you think that, you're wrong. This is 25 solid minutes of this. And he makes a mighty strong case. And he lays it out like a prosecutor would lay it out. He lays it out like, say, Robert Jackson laid it out at Nuremberg. Point by point by point by point. And again, as I've noted, what you get in return from people like that addle-pated booby Jeff Sessions from Alabama is, I believe that Russ Feingold don't like Mrs. Inouye. Poor Mrs. Inouye died, and Senator Inouye, he fought in the World War II, and he could at least expect that we'd support him. What in the hell that passes for brains inside the skulls? I don't mean to lean too much on my Southern heritage, but the fact of the matter remains that I am the only 5 nights a week worldwide talk radio host who was born and raised in the Deep South. And so I kind of understand some of it. Jeff Sessions with that hooey about supporting the troops. He wouldn't have been out of place 140 years ago, 145 years ago. Owning a big plantation, got himself a fine horse and a nice gray uniform, and getting a bunch of hay seeds and hicks and dirt farmers to follow him into just hell and death for a lost cause that wasn't even worth fighting in the first place. He was never going to get a scratch on him. You think Jeff Sessions has ever heard a shot fired in anger? Hell no.
Jeff Sessions is another one of those elitist, antebellum southern snobs that's more than happy to get other people killed for his own glory and aggrandizement. Oh, who was it? Pickett. Pickett at Gettysburg, you know, had the pomaded ringlets and worried more about his hair than he did his men. That's Jeff Sessions. And what a shame, you know, and the thing is, the heritage that Southerners like to look back on, of nobility in that lost cause, and the genius of the Southern Field Command, Stonewall Jackson, Albert Sidney Johnston, bleeding to death into his boot at Shiloh so that some of those boys that had followed him on foot could have medical treatment instead. All of that is put by the boards by the likes of Jeff Sessions, who's nothing more than a modern-day, goopy-voiced George Wallace. It is what it is. And what it is a damn shame and a blight on the people of the southern United States. Every time this country has called, in large part, people in the southern United States have risen up and gone and served in World War I, World War II, Korea. It was poor southerners and urban kids who fought Vietnam. Kids from the Midwest and the cornfields. Not the well-to-do, not the elite. It's the same damn story every time. And there's always a Jeff Sessions standing up there talking about how he loves this country. And it makes me sick. Jeff Sessions couldn't be bothered when the Widowmaker at Jim Walter No. 1 blew up in 2001 in Alabama. Paul Wellstone, a Democrat from Minnesota, called one of those widows straight away and said, "We're going to get to the bottom of it," and Jeff Sessions was nowhere to be found. But that's the way it is with a Republican. Whenever there's real governmental work to do, they're nowhere to be found. All they know is gimme, gimme, gimme. So at least, you know where you stand, I guess, with these southern punks. Trent Lott, Haley Barbour, John Cornyn, Kay Bailey Hutchison, that Tom Coburn creep in Oklahoma, Jim Demented in South Carolina, and Lindsey Graham, lick spittles, a blight upon American history, all of them. That's it tonight. My lovely wife Agnes produced the show and did a heck of a job in the process. Brian Reznor announces the program. Randy Kerbway is our engineer. Ben Birch maintains the stream of this program, and he maintains the archives of this and many other fine liberal programs as well. Still got a fundraiser going on, almost to his goal. Help him out.